Hey guys, welcome to another brand new episode of the Game Horizon After Hours podcast. After what, 2 months being gone?
It could have been. I don't really know time anymore.
I know.
Time is only measured in, do I have a PlayStation 4 yet, and where's my PlayStation 4?
And how many days?
34.
Really?
I've been keeping track for the past several days, so I just need to do math from the last time I said it out loud. And yesterday I said 35, so today it's 34. By the time you listen to this podcast, the number will be even lower, which makes me happy.
Yes. Well, of course. That's just natural.
Because PlayStation 4 is the bringer of happiness and joy?
Yeah. It's like Santa Claus, but real.
I hope it's real. It made me think that the PlayStation
4... Well, we did see it at E3, but anyways.
And IndieCade, which we'll talk about later.
Ooh, yes, IndieCade. Like, I'm shifting my hands for that. I was really excited by that. But anyways, so let's get everything settled. Mm-hmm. How are you guys doing?
I am actually kind of salty because I can't find my Vita carrying case, which is holding 3 of my games, 2 of my 32-gig memory cards, and a pair of SteelSeries headphones.
Wow.
That sucks.
And a cleaning cloth.
You keep losing those. Like, I think the last time we hung out, you also lost some of them, like, at my apartment. But not with the games.
I'm okay. I'll find it. It's somewhere.
Yeah. How about the rest of you, fools?
I'm all right. I've been playing way too much Grand Theft Auto V, and I'm finally almost done with the main game. Well, I finished the main storyline, but there's still some stuff I want to do before
completionist
get into the online stuff. And I've been playing Disgaea D2.
Yeah, I don't envy you guys, stupid completionists. How about you, Chris?
I'm playing Alien Rage. I bought that on Steam.
What's Alien Rage? I've never even heard of this. I know about every game.
Yeah.
It's a first-person shooter. Unreal Engine.
Okay, you just basically described every Unreal Engine game.
No, I know.
No, it is every Unreal Engine game.
Okay. Oh, it I see
looks
what you did
like
there.
Gears. Slight gears, he says. The only thing it's missing is the Lancer with the chainsaw on it.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're having a good time with it, though.
Yeah.
Epic's got it patented, probably.
They probably do. Did you know when they were doing Xbox achievements, you know there's an achievement for the original Gears, like kill X number of people with a crossbow called the Nuge? Because Ted Nugent hunts with a crossbow.
Oh, okay, I get it.
Epic and Microsoft actually had to go to his estate or his lawyer or whatever and actually get the right to call something the Nuge.
Wow.
And there's a couple of letters like, I, the legal counsel for Ted Nugent, offered to trademark the Nuge, blah, 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 for using Gears of War. Yeah, it's that kind of thing.
Well, yeah.
So you can patent anything.
Yeah. That's why they're legal departments, and we don't.
And that's how they stay in business. Can you imagine a world without lawyers?
Yeah, please don't sue us. Just saying. We don't have a legal department yet.
I know.
You just gave people ideas. Anyways, cool. Well, I'm glad you guys are, like, active in gaming. As you guys know, I haven't.
I haven't even covered all the stuff I've been playing. I just wanted to kind of narrow it down.
Yeah. So do you want to, like, just name them?
I got Pokemon yesterday. It came out at 9 p.m. Eastern time. Well, no, Pacific
digitally.
Time.
Digitally.
Yeah. Okay. Because you can get it digitally, and I'm like, one of the great things about it, and maybe it's just me being weird about living in the future, but if I had to go to the store and get my car and do those things in reverse, because you have to get in the car first and then go to the store, and then walk to the counter, get someone to pick it up, rather than press 3 buttons on my 3DS to get it, I probably wouldn't have gotten it. Mm. But because, and I already had the money in my wallet, so I just didn't even have to re-enter anything, it's boop, 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 and it took forever to download. It seems to be at least 3 gigs. It's a big game.
Now, do you feel like having them available digitally and stuff is very much more is a lot more conducive to compulsive buying?
Yes. Mm. I can absolutely say that because this was kind of a compulsive buy.
Amazing. Anything else you've been playing?
Playing or dabbling? I am giving Beyond Two Souls the full Ted treatment, which is I put it down and look at it for 2 weeks and not play it.
In the wrapping.
Actually, I've taken it out of the wrapping and put it in its binder.
Okay.
I have a binder with every one of my discs.
Mm-hmm.
I have been playing Dive Kick again because at IndieCade there was a Dive Kick tournament. It made me want to play some more Dive Kick.
Mm-hmm.
But I've actually spent a lot of time working on, ironically, my backlog tracking application for Windows.
Hmm.
The latest breakthrough I have is you can now import your Steam library.
Interesting.
I should post a link to this somewhere on the website. I have it available through my Dropbox.
Yeah.
You can download it any time.
Yeah, but
totally. What if you get a new game? Do you have to redo the whole import, or can it figure out what's
no,
different?
No, I coded it so that if you get a new game, you can redo the import, and it'll only add the new stuff.
Hmm.
first thing I thought of.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm not that bad of a programmer.
So does it always like query like when you open the program? How does it work?
Manual entry. Oh. Good old-fashioned poke typing. And I'm trying to reduce that. I have automatic Steam import. I'm going to try to look at Xbox and PlayStation import. Nintendo import is impossible because Nintendo doesn't have any way for to track a list of played games.
I'm pretty sure Nintendo's like, what's an API? What's RSS feeds?
Actually, Nintendo, I want to talk more about IndieCade. They had a really, really strong presence at IndieCade, mm-hmm. and they seemed very competent.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that later when we get to the IndieCade section
competent.
Of this podcast.
Okay. I was going to say competent and confident.
I would say they had a right to be confident. They had mm-hmm. a very slick-looking booth.
Mm-hmm. It was very wide open, too.
It was wide open. There wasn't lines like E3. There's maybe one or two people in front of you for any game you wanted to play.
Yeah.
And they definitely have a console exclusive that's worth looking at.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Neat. So, Ari, how about you?
How about me what?
Like, what have you been playing and all that?
Like I said before,
Grand Theft Auto. You should talk about how you got Disgaea D2 early.
Yeah, oh, well, luckily, I live here in California, so that must be close to where they're shipping from, because I got Disgaea D2 3 days prior to its release date.
At a GameStop or something?
No, via Nipponichi directly.
Oh, wow.
I bought it from their store. They shipped it on Friday. I got it on Saturday.
Then we wiped his achievements.
Yeah.
That was fun.
We installed a new 500 gig hard drive.
My old PlayStation hard drive is now in Ari's PlayStation.
Yeah.
But we had internet trouble, and so what ended up happening is we couldn't synchronize the trophies with the PlayStation server, so they were lost forever till he went and replayed the game.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
got them all back.
I had only gotten six so far, and they were all pretty easy to get. I mean, one of the achievements in that game is literally watch the opening cinematic.
Wow. And then there's one that's just mount a dude.
Yeah.
Mount a dude?
Yeah, there's a...
Disgaea D2, if you read the preview that's available on GamerHorizon.com, one of the new mechanics is humanoids can mount monsters.
Yes, so I did.
Like,
and I got
like
a trophy.
A saddle, you jerk.
So, yeah, I was able to get back my achievements within, I don't know, 30
minutes. And now
he's
got 380 gigs free to download all his PlayStation Plus hoo-ha.
Yay!
Amazing. That's it?
He's pretty much been playing Disgaea D2 and GTA 5. I've been paying attention.
Okay. Chris, I guess you already said.
Yeah, Alien Rage.
So, okay, other than first-person shooter, can you be more descriptive about this thing?
Is it a third-person shooter, maybe?
No, it's first-person. You know, it's kind of weird how I picked it up, started playing, and it looks like Gears, acts like Gears. There's no cover system.
Wait, that's not Gears, then?
Gears is all about...
It really does look like it, though.
Okay.
Which is really weird. You know, I guess I was kind of thinking that if anybody purchases or licenses the Unreal Engine, once you're done building your game, once you start rendering it, it all comes out to look like Gears of War or something.
That's kind of the funny thing, is like when I first heard like people were going to use the Unreal Engine and stuff like that, I always imagined that they would all get like their own kind of version of like Gears of War, and then they have to just kind of fork off of that.
Well, you know what's interesting is
that's pretty much Alien Rage.
There are games using the Unreal Engine that don't look anything like that.
Well, yeah.
The new Guilty Gear is running on it.
Yeah.
And it looks like Guilty Gear. They've done some of that stuff, but it's running on the Unreal Engine.
I know there's a bunch of other games, but I'm blanking.
Oh,
right now.
Oh, I remember The Last Remnant.
Oh, yeah.
That ran on the Unreal Engine.
Yeah, not well.
That
Wolverine
yeah.
game, that played, that was on Unreal.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, our whole vision of, like, oh my god, it's an Unreal Engine game, therefore it's going to play like every single other Unreal Engine
game.
They're
going to be beefy guys.
Everything looks that way. I mean, if, you know, you had more variety of...
It's just the laziness, probably, of the people who are, like, working on it or something.
Or it's in the contract.
No. No, what?
The contract, one of your guys will be beefy.
You can't say that for Mass Effect. That's an Unreal Engine game.
That's true.
You can make beefy guys.
Okay. There's Borderlands. Borderlands is Unreal, right?
I think it is, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. So, I'm
not following the contract.
Yeah. So the past couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks, I've been going to, like, this Dave & Buster's in Anaheim. Because, like, you know, there have been a couple of events there and stuff. So... It was really weird playing, like, all these old games. Like, I didn't know that Infinity Blade had an arcade port.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, I was like, that's weird. And then Fruit Ninja was there, too. And then Namco had, like, a 4D horror game that they had, which was like, what is going on? And then, like, of course, you know, the millions of other games, like Deal or No Deal.
And you know, they're all terrible at them because Dave & Buster's is a casual arcade with casuals that don't know how to, like,
right,
be good at games.
I mean, they had, like, the whole full, like, rack of, like, you know, for Daytona USA, which was kind of nice. Like, the whole...
The old Daytona?
Yeah, the old Daytona, which was kind of nice. You know, I mean, they had all these old games, and, you know, it's like, whatever. And then, lately, I haven't really been playing much because, like, my roommate has been playing a lot of Grand Theft Auto V. In fact, one of these, like, this week, actually, it was funny, I woke up in the morning, and I usually wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning to go to work, right?
Yeah.
And I woke up, I opened the door, and she's, like, just playing away at Grand Theft Auto. I'm like, did you sleep? And she's like, no, I haven't slept since 11:30 in the evening. I'm like, you've just been playing GTA? She's like, yeah. Really addicted. Like,
oh, she's using her own save, not messing with you.
Oh, no. She knows. She's, you know, like, it's funny because, like...
That's a no-no.
Yeah, because you look at her and you're like, no, she can't be a gamer, but she totally is.
Yeah, but can she win at Evo?
Well, that doesn't mean anything. He can't
win. Yeah, it does. Chris, if you're not, like, the best in the world at games, I hate you.
Well, Chris and Ari can't win at Evo. I can't win at Evo. You can't win at Evo! There's a flaw in your logic, sir. Yep, time to practice.
Yep.
Alright, so pretty much that GTA, you know, I've been going back to Red Dead Redemption and actually a lot of like my older games, because the reason why is because, and I wanted to tell you guys this who are listening to the podcast, we are preparing a massive list of top games of this generation individually. And so I felt that this was the proper time, since there's a lull, to basically take a look at all the other games that we played in the past, or at least for me, and be like, hey, I actually really like that. In fact, like, I've discovered that, you know, I've actually liked a lot of games better than Grand Theft Auto V, which is really surprising. And, you know, I've just been kind of like dabbling in a lot of my old libraries and stuff, like library of games and stuff, and it's really interesting what I discovered. I don't know if you guys will ever have time, or you'll just kind of rely on nostalgia or anything, but that's what I've been doing.
I rarely have time to play old games. I don't have time to play new games.
Well, it's not even like... Well, even if you just dabble in a little bit and be like, oh, I'm reminded that, yeah, that's right, this happened, that, you know.
I've been meaning to go back and play Suikoden 5 for, like, the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Well, that's a different story. We're talking about 40, 50 hours easily.
Yeah.
You know, and
most of my backlog or games that I want to play again are RPGs. So.
I'm afraid of when Final Fantasy X comes out.
I know, I'm going to have to get that.
Yeah.
I've already pre-ordered. I have been pre-ordered for about a year.
Yeah.
And now we have a Japanese release date, which is technically 2013.
Yeah.
December 26th, 2013, it comes out in Japan.
Yeah.
And no confirmed American release date. They've said winter.
Yeah. Speaking of which, did you guys hear about this thing that Square is doing for eidos games, where it's like a pub fund?
It is. They're partnered with Indiegogo,
mm-hmm.
and which is like the number one competitor to Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And you have to pitch them a game, and if it gets greenlit, then you can publicly fund. And one of the advantages is that you will be able to use legacy eidos characters.
Yeah.
And IP. And if you look at legacy eidos characters and IP, I think the only thing that comes up that anyone would care about would be Fear Effect.
I was going to say, like, I thought you were going to say Daikatana or something.
Daikatana is, in fact, also on that list.
Fear Effect, Legacy of Kain.
Oh, yeah.
I think Legacy of Kain is out, though.
Oh, really?
No.
Well,
it shouldn't be.
I think they're reluctant to let anyone use Legacy of Kain, because I think that plans for that.
Yeah, maybe. Tomb Raider, obviously, that's out of question. Same thing with Deus Ex, you know?
I can see them rebooting the whole franchise.
First of all, like I said, we're not talking about, like, you know, big eidos titles. We're talking about the smaller ones, like... Fighting Force?
Fighting Force.
I remember Fighting Force. And, wasn't there a game, like, I think it was, like, on the PlayStation 1 and, like, PC, where, like, it has, like, the name Ian Livingstone on it, and had, like, some sort of, it's almost like the self-important title, like, Ian Livingstone, some dungeon exploring game, whatever, it's like,
that's Ian Livingstone teaches you how to lick a butthole.
It's an eidos title.
No, two buttholes.
Yeah. So, alright, so let's see, what else have I been playing? Yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, you know, GTA 5, I popped in Kingdoms of Amalur because that was, you know, free for PlayStation Plus this week. Or was it last week?
Last week. This week's free title was Shadow of the Colossus. And yes. Next week's, I can tell you, is going to be Poker Night 2.
Wow.
Yay!
Amazing.
Yeah, that's a fun game.
And then the week after that is going to be Hotline Miami, and then the final week will be Sign Mora. If I'm wrong... Oh, well.
When are we going to get Assassin's Creed 3? Because remember, like, they said...
What makes you think they ever promised it for America?
Because they announced it at E3 2013 that it's coming out for America.
I thought it was only for Europe.
Nope.
Well, it'll be a November title then, because Assassin's Creed 4 comes out in...
That's what I was thinking.
October 29th, so just like... It's a very common strategy to hype the next game with a free release of the previous game.
Yeah, Battlefield 3, that worked out.
That worked, you know... I think I'm the only person here who's tried the Battlefield 4 beta.
Mm-hmm.
They've made some very smart choices. It's easier to play. It still feels exactly like Battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
But it's... like
it's Battlefield.
Yeah, you start out with...
Chris is still going to suck with, like, piloting.
I'm not even going to give a check.
No, there's a mode now you can just remove all vehicles.
Oh.
And the pace of that is closer to Call of Duty. So okay. I think there's going to be some fans of that.
That's interesting.
Maybe not Chris.
Well, I could pilot a tank. I mean, it's just the helicopters.
Well, the helicopters require to use two analog sticks.
Speaking of which, I wanted to kind of move, you know, speaking of piloting shit, I'm going to use this opportunity to transition as to, like, Grand Theft Auto 5 because...
I hate
they're piloting. The only two... Okay, so out of the four people, Sean, by the way, is in Las Vegas, and we miss Sean.
Aww.
Yeah, he like a game pig. Yeah, piggy.
Yeah, so... Okay. Ari and I are the only two people here that actually played Grand Theft Auto 5 extensively.
I own it.
I hate piloting anything. Okay, especially helicopters in that fucking game.
Yeah, I
what the fuck is wrong with that?
Well, first of all, they added, like, you can feel the air while you're flying around.
Yes!
It moves your planes around. It moves your helicopters around. So you're, like, trying to go full on straight in a helicopter, and it's, like, wobbling back and forth with turbulence and shit.
Yes, uh-huh.
Then just the controlling the damn thing is a pain in the ass, because you're manipulating the camera, you're tilting left and right to rotate the thing, you're using the analog stick to tilt the thing forward to try to move forward. It's just not intuitive, but I guess helicopters are pretty difficult to pilot to begin with.
Yeah, but not unintuitive, I would imagine, in real life.
It's just... It's not easy, and you rarely do what you actually want to do. And you know what's ironic about all this?
Mm-hmm.
I beat the whole damn game, right?
Right.
I did a bunch of optional missions for Trevor that used a little plane.
Yeah.
I got pretty used to flying. I actually found that flying around in first person made it a little bit easier.
Mm.
But after I beat the game, I found a flight school.
Wait, what?
There's a flight school. It teaches you how to fly a damn plane.
Wait, no. The reason why I'm asking this is because that's a requirement in one of the missions.
I don't know about that.
In the heist, actually, the second heist.
You go to flight school?
Unless you went the direct route.
I have not. I might have, but
so
basically, whenever there was an option of a heist that involved aircraft, I avoided it.
Yeah, because there was a section of the game where, you know, you get through heists. There are only four heists in the game, which is really sucky. But the second heist, all heists give you an option of, like, you know, whether you want to do it the smart way or the dumb way, which is usually the difference between stealthy and more action-based, right? I took the stealthy way for the second heist mission, and they forced Michael's one of the three characters in the game. I know you guys already know this, but just for people who aren't in know, Trevor forced him to go to flight school. So I had to go through all that shit as a requirement to
didn't have to do that. I saw the little plane icon down there,
and you were like, no,
what's this? And I went over
But that's how I got the flight school.
Yeah.
But, okay, so here's the big but of everything. The flight school does not teach you how to pilot a helicopter.
I know. It gives you a bunch of plane tutorials, and then it's all right. All right. It's like, okay, now you're in a helicopter. Good luck.
No, not only that. It was a time trial.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's like, hey, I know we didn't teach you how to, like, you know, pilot a helicopter. Here's a time trial. And by the way, that's not enough. You have to go through, like, okay, you know how, like, the Golden Gate Bridge has, like, these little kind of supports that go, like, horizontal and stuff? You have to fly through two of those.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really? Really? You guys suck. You guys suck. Who the fuck thought that this was a great idea?
Rockstar.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, there should have been a whole separate list of tutorials for helicopters.
I wouldn't have minded it, because I enjoyed the plane tutorials. You know, like, the actual...
What about, like, the target practice for weapons? Did you ever go into one of the ammunitions that had a range?
Yes, I did. I went as Franklin because I wanted to improve his weapon skills. And, you know, that worked out. You know, that's one thing that I really like about Grand Theft Auto V is, like, that they brought a lot of the kind of RPG-ish elements of San Andreas, but not explicitly the same things. Like, you know, the food
thing. Yeah, you don't, like, gain weight or anything.
Yeah, you don't gain weight.
You can go to a convenience store and chow down on snacks, but you won't get any bigger.
Yeah, and I'm totally fine with that, because that was just ridiculous anyway. Like, trying to, like, overeat yourself, and then all of a sudden you, like, threw up everything you ate. Oh, I mean, that's a very CJ kind of thing for, like, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. But in this game, it's like, all right, you know, like, you can rob a convenience store, or you can do a lot of different things in this game, and... You know, like, it's really well built.
Yeah. I mean, I know it doesn't have a perfect story, but I can't think of many games that deserve a 10 more than that as far as I'm concerned. I know our resident reviewer for this game, Sean, gave it a 9, and he's entitled to his opinion. But I feel like there's just so much to do and there's so much fun to be had that I couldn't possibly give less than
You know, 10. It's funny because, like, I was thinking about this the other day while I was driving home from work, and I was like, man, I cannot give this anything higher than an 8.
Really?
Yeah. It's not that I hate the series. It's just that I've always felt that, you know, there's always a lot of missed opportunities when it comes to storytelling in Grand Theft Auto games, because they have to, and it's not a fault of the game, it's just the way that the game is. It's basically a caricature of real life. And I feel that because they have to stick to that so much, that they miss a greater opportunity to tell a better story. So, like, for example, like, you know, like, if you compare the narrative of four, which is a much more serious story, not a lot of people liked it because, you know, it kind of hit close to home, I think. But as far as, like, five goes, like, the character development is so strong in the beginning, and then you get this, like, really long period where they get embroiled in this other stuff where nothing really happens. I mean, they were trying to do the whole, like, buddy-buddy thing where they're, like, trying to kind of introduce, like, you know, the dynamic between the three characters and stuff like that, which is fine and all that. But it's like their world is so much bigger than just, like, the three of them, you know? Like, they still have the familial problems and stuff. And the only way that you can really touch that is if you hang out with the individual members. Like, for example, if you had Franklin hang out with Michael's son, you know? Like, you only see a glimpse of that if you actually take the time to do it. But at the same time, there's no value to it. Like, it's just, if you're totally bored out of your skull and you really don't have anything else to do in the entire world, it's like, all right, let's hang out. You know, which, to me, that was one of the parts in Grand Theft Auto V that I kind of had a love-hate relationship with. Because it's like, yeah, you see, like, Roman's, you know, personality by hanging out with him a lot more. But at the same time, you really hate it because you feel like you're babysitting them.
Yeah.
You know?
Hey, well, cousin, let's go bowling!
Yes,
hey cousin, let's go see Shaw! It's like, no, I don't want to... No, and then you're going to hate me if I don't hang out with you.
Yeah.
Well, I can agree that it's not the best story in the world in Grand Theft Auto V, but I actually disagree about the character development. I expect a certain amount of weirdness from the characters in the Grand Theft Auto universe.
But that's what I'm saying. It's not the fault of the game, it's just the fault of the form of the game, because they have to be they have to exist within a specific kind of expectation. And the expectation is everything is kind of off kilter, which is why, like we were talking about earlier,
instead of the FBI, it's the FIB.
Exactly.
Like, they don't need to do that, but they choose to because they want it to be familiar but different enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, they have all kinds of stuff like that that's been consistent throughout the series. I mean, Cluck and Bell goes way back.
Oh, that's what
that's one of the things I respect most about it. I mean, the fact that there's a franchise in the game called Cluck and Bell. Mm-hmm. That you can purchase stock on it, mm-hmm. and you can go to their website, and you see commercials for it on the in-game television, which you can watch for hours, by the way, mm-hmm. or you can hear commercials for it on the radio, which you can also listen to for hours, and there's a freaking talk radio station that goes on for days. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just incredible, the depth of the game, and even if the game barely had any storyline content at all, I would still be hard-pressed to give it less than a 10, because it's just so much fun, and there's so much to do, and it's so fully realized.
Yeah, I mean, I guess fun is subjective, obviously, but, like, as far as I'm concerned, like, you know, it's a well-built game, I'm not going to deny that, but the parts where I feel it should have, like, honed and have learned in the past to do better with, like, they kind of just, well, we want a bigger world. Let's throw that out the door or something like that. It's,
you know, I enjoy just like driving up PCH. Or basically the
see, because no one actually likes PCH.
The equivalent. But I mean, just driving out of the city, going down the beach, and, you know, it's familiar to me because I live in California.
Mm-hmm.
But just the fact that I could drive for miles and miles and miles, literally, in this game, mm-hmm. And, you know, random stuff happens, and
that's the thing. Like I said,
the weather's dynamically changing, and there's just, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, like I said, it's a well built game. I mean, it's Rockstar. If it's anything less than what our expectations are, it would be a complete and utter disappointment.
Yeah.
But it's just, for me, like, you know, I have, like I said, like, I have a very specific expectation of my games, and this is also why, like, I didn't review it for the site, you know? Like, that's why, like, I'm rating it however I feel like it is. I'm not, like, basing it off of what other people think, so...
But it's too bad Sean's not here, because I'm sure he has a few things to say.
This podcast would be a half hour longer.
But yeah. You could always... but just check out his review on the site if you want to see what he thinks
about it.
It's
very verbose.
And it deserves to be verbose. The game is long.
Yeah.
And I believe Sean has said he would really like to never review another open world game again.
Yeah.
He did say that.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, how's that Saints Row 4?
I knew you were going to bring it up. Okay, so my challenge with the Saints Row 4 review isn't necessarily that I can't talk about the gameplay so much, I can't talk about the story. The story is very well known. It's the Zin is invading the world, blah, 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 blah. But that's all I can talk about.
Without going into spoiler.
Exactly. Land. That's kind of like, that's really like my challenge there, because it's like, oh, how am I going to just toss it in there? Because the way that my review right now is structured, it's like, okay, I go right into the gameplay, but I'm like, I need a good transition to the gameplay part, because, you know, kind of a little bit explain like the dominatrix stuff, like how you actually get in there. And it's like, but the thing is, to be honest, the gameplay is like the best part about that game. And not only that, also the kookiness and the story. Okay, so spoiler said that
you just said that you would give Grand Theft Auto no higher than an 8.
Yeah.
What's your barometer for Saints Row?
Not a 10.
Not a 10.
A 9.
9?
Yeah.
You think that's what you're going to land on when you're done with it?
No, it's already there.
It's there.
Yeah, ooh. It's just, you know, it's been there.
So there you have it. Saints Row 4, better than Grand Theft Auto 5.
Hey, don't say that.
But isn't that the fun of a numeric rating system?
Yeah, no. Well, no, it's relative to, like,
the I am being difficult on purpose, because I don't think, like, there are games that I could give a 10 to. Like, there's, okay, 999, mm-hmm. I would give that game a 10. Mm-hmm. I'm aware that game has a very fatal flaw that it has to be replayed.
Right.
Well, I'd still give it a 10.
Well, I think that, well, the way that
I would.
The way that I rate games is I don't compare it to any other game. I compare it to itself.
Right.
So I don't, so when people, when a lot of kids say, like, oh, well, you know, like, I think there, we had a review, like, that was posted on N4G. Some dude, like, basically said, oh, this game is obviously better than, like, Grand Theft Auto 5. And it was like some, I think it was like a portable game or something that we posted, mm-hmm. which I'm like, why would you even do that? Why would you say, like, because of the score, it's, like, automatically better than that? It's like, you know...
In a way, a score is just a way we have to pay the piper of structured reviews.
Right.
Well, it's also relative to its, you know, genre, whatever genre it falls into.
I don't think so.
I do. I mean,
to me, I don't rate it that way.
I don't know, because, like, say you give Grand Theft Auto an 8, right? And then you give something like, I don't know, Plants vs. Zombies 2 a 9 or a 10.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like, all right, they're both... great games. Grand Theft Auto is great. It's got an 8. Plants vs. Zombies 2 is great. It's got a 9.
But you can't compare...
Which one is better, though?
But
I mean, one definitely got the better score. One might be a better representation of its relative genre. I don't know.
I don't think that way. Like, I think when I rate games, it's based off of that game. I didn't... When I was playing Grand Theft Auto 5, I wasn't like, oh man, I wish I was playing Saints Row. No. Like, I was rating it on its own merits as a game.
Right.
Like, it was never anything about, like, oh, well, this is better than that and all that stuff. But I understand a lot of people do that.
My point is that you can have an amazing, you know, blockbuster game like Grand Theft Auto V that has the most expensive video game ever designed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can have, you know, an indie game with a budget of $5,000.
Right. I mean, look at Walking Dead last year.
Say the indie game gets the better score. I mean... Mm-hmm.
That's why it doesn't work.
Yeah.
That's why you cannot compare scores from one game to another. And even with Grand Theft Auto and Saints Row 4, I don't consider them the same genre. One's a comedy. The other one's a parody.
Yeah.
You know, like, Saints Row 4 is obviously a comedy game. It's kind of like if I compared I don't know, 40-year-old virgin with the English patient.
I'd do that. I haven't seen either movie.
Well, I've seen, like, 40-year-old virgin, but not the English patient. But you know what I mean? It's like, there. It's so, even within video games, there's so much, like, delinearity. Like, I bet you what's going to happen is once, like, Destiny comes out, they're going to compare it to, like, all the other reviews of, like, Borderlands 2. Just because they're like, oh, they're both shooters and they're both co-op stuff. But it's like, they're two completely different games, you know, in general. So that's why, I rated it that way. And as far as, like, Saints Row 4 is concerned, I had a lot of fun. Yes, I had a lot of fun with Grand Theft Auto 5, but I'll be honest. You know, like, if you really want to compare both of them, there's nothing that can compare to being able to run really fast and just blow through a whole bunch of traffic, like, you know, like in cars and, like, Steelport, and then jump right over a fucking skyscraper and not have to deal with driving ever again. That is amazing.
That's actually the same reason I ended up hitting Crackdown.
Really?
Because you could go so fast, it's like, you didn't need cars anymore. And then it's like, then what's the point of cars? Why do I want to collect these cars?
Well, it's funny because they have, like, in Saints Row 4, they have storyline justifications to take off your powers. Sometimes.
Ah.
Yeah, so they'll be like, you'll have to drive. And then, of course, the main character emotes the same thing as you're emoting. You're like, fuck it, I want my powers, you know? and it's awesome that your main character is literally, like, your projection in the real world. Because they're like, let's have some fucking fun. Like, unlock my powers.
Speaking
so like,
of nope. Projection in the real world, how is the Nolan North voice option if you ever selected that?
It's not that good. It's basically like he's doing the voices as himself. No change in voice whatsoever. It's actually not as funny as it sounds.
It's more of an in-joke for people that know he's in every game.
Yes.
Even, except now that's Troy Baker.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm not... This is, you know, my rating of Saints Row 4 and Grand Theft Auto 5 isn't obviously a representation of, like, the whole spectrum of the video game universe. My roommate plays Grand Theft Auto 5 more than Saints Row 4. In fact, she's never... even popped in Saints Row 4.
I've yet to get it either.
Yeah.
It's on my wish list for sure.
Yeah. Get it on PC.
Yeah.
I haven't got it
yet. And the only reason why it can't get a 10 for me is I crashed the game, like, left and right.
Really?
Yes. Well, they let you... basically, like, they allow you to break the game. Like, it's part of the game itself. It's kind of this weird thing. Like, there are moments where, like, there's these kind of... I forgot what they're called. But if characters are near this kind of area, they're like, I don't know if you're familiar with, like, 3D modeling and stuff like that. You know how, like, textures are attached to vertices, like the points and the...
I am.
If you have a character near that, it goes all out of whack. So, like, basically, it just pulls, like, the textures all over the place as if your video card was frying.
Oh my god!
So that's, like, really bad if you're trying to benchmark this game, like, on your PC, because you're like, wait. Is my PC breaking right now? Because all the polygons, like, but then you find, like, you know, like, there's like a truck that's, like, driving upside down, but the wheels are still underneath.
Sounds like something Kojima would do.
Exactly right. I almost feel like, you know what? This might be the, it might be. It might be the answer to Metal Gear Solid 2. I think it is. I think this game is, which is kind of funny. So that being said, excited about Enter the Dominatrix, because if that's going to be a parody of a comedic game, like, as in, like, it's supposed to be a mock documentary of how they build the game. I mean, that's going to be interesting. It's
that,
like,
really weird.
It's like Portal 2. It's like Portal's, like, you know, commentary,
that was,
like,
originally DLC for Saints 3, right?
What's that?
Wasn't that originally DLC for the previous game?
Yes, and actually, unfortunately, a lot of people think that when they made Enter the Dominatrix, that they just expanded it. No. Saints Row 4 was in development while Enter the Dominatrix was being in development. So they were already building out Saints Row 4, they just didn't have a scope of it. Mm-hmm. And the scope of Enter the Dominatrix made much more sense, so they just applied it there.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not a port of Enter the Dominatrix at all. In fact, there's a lot of optimizations with the game engine that even on the PC you'll notice, like, tremendous differences.
Yeah, I can't wait to play it.
And the only other bad part, which is why it's a 9, is that they really took care of the people who loved the first two games. They really did. Because, yeah, it's still crazy. It's still the Saints Row that you know from 3 plus 4 kind of thing. But there's so many things that they refer to in the first two games that you're like, If you've never played any of them, you're like, who the hell are these people? But they do have, like, a little video at the beginning where they say, like, all right, well, this is what happened to these people and stuff like that, mm-hmm. to give you an overview.
That's good.
And it's funny because they do so many good things with that game that makes it so much fun. I can't really spoil a lot of it because a lot of people have already spoiled it. But trust me, when you get to those parts, especially when you're trying to get Johnny Gat, which is public knowledge, he's in the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most amazing part of that game. Have you gotten to that part yet?
No.
How far are you in it?
I haven't gotten much farther since
Since we played?
Last time we, yeah.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ. Really? Oh, my God.
No, I've gotten farther since we played, but I haven't gotten much farther than that.
Oh, my God.
Exactly. I mean, you know,
gotta
replay Mass Effect 3 before.
Of course. Yeah, the entirety of Mass Effect.
That's a priority.
That's another thing. Okay, if we want to do, like, silly comparisons, like, you know, we're comparing Grand Theft Auto 5 with, like, Saints Row 4, let's compare the relationships in Mass Effect and Dragon Age games versus how it handles it in Saints Row 4.
Saints
Row 4 does have a relationship system, which amounts to, like, hey, Kinsey, wanna fuck? She punches you and, like, rapes you.
Wow. Sounds good.
Not only that, like, you know, like, they have the side quests, which are loyalty quests, they call it. So if you finish it for them, they get the super uber version of themselves, so that when they spawn in the world, they have superpowers.
Mm.
Which is great. You know, it's a good way to kind of divvy up the side quests and all that stuff. But yeah, there's a ton of stuff to do in that game. I like Saints Row 4.
Does it feel a lot like Injustice?
In what way?
I mean, not Injustice.
But Justice, Butts Among Us.
I'm sorry. Wrong game.
Yeah. Just spit it out.
I'm just forgetting my open world game names.
Crackdown?
No, the one with the superheroes, man, on PlayStation.
Dick-ass man.
Oh, Infamous.
Infamous.
It's a lot crazier than that.
Yeah.
If I can crash the game, they're letting you do things that you're not even supposed to do.
No.
Like, is for a console, like, literally, like, I, you know, you're so powerful in that game. You can levitate cars, throw it at people and stuff. You use, like, all these different AoE powers.
Too much for the consoles to handle.
Yeah. It's definitely if you have a PC that can run it, go for it.
There should be some fail safes to prevent all the crashes.
Well, the thing is, like, they didn't want that because they want people to just go crazy. And you can go crazy. Like, if you're like in a tank, you know how, like, there's tank mayhem missions? Still do that in there, but they're, like, 1,000 times more crazier.
Yeah.
You know, like, insurance fraud, we talked about that in the last podcast. You can literally, like, fly all the way up to the other island if you wanted to, which is great. So, anyways, I completely dominated conversation with Saints Row 4. So Grand Theft Auto 5...
What?
I mean,
shrug?
Yeah, I mean it's a well-built game. At some point, Ted will play it. Maybe when he's 60.
Oh my God, that might be true!
No, you're never going to get there.
You know what's weird is that as much as I'm kind of, like, into PC gaming over console gaming... Mm-hmm. I was fine playing this on Xbox 360.
I actually had a problem with Battlefield 4. I have the beta for PS3 and PC. I had to run it on medium on my PC, and I started to think, wait, this is looking pretty good on PS3 compared to my PC.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like on PS4 it's going to smoke my PC. So now I'm at an impasse.
Well, it's a difference between, like, well, buying, like, a $400, $500 video card versus, like, you know, like, just playing it on a console, right? That's always been the selling point.
But I never thought I'd get to that point again. I thought I'd be a PC gamer, like, completely for life.
Well, how often have you upgraded your stuff on your PC?
Last thing I upgraded is my video card. I got a Radeon 7850.
Which was how many years ago?
Like one.
Ooh, already?
Well, it's not a high-end card. The 7850 is this generation's mid-range card.
Mm.
High mid-range, but mm-hmm. mid-range.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, that's why I stopped with PC gaming, because I became a lot more... concerned with the performance of my system, and I stopped, and I couldn't play any of my games because if it hitched, it's like, I can't play this game.
Well, the reason I brought up PC versus consoles is because Grand Theft Auto 5 actually runs pretty damn well on the consoles this time around.
And I'm pretty sure...
Much better than Grand Theft Auto 4.
Much better. Very surprised by that.
But it's also because it's required install.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge part of it, I bet. Because, I mean, you're not streaming shit off the disc anymore. You're like,
you still are, though. You know how I know?
Yeah.
Because apparently my disc got dirty, and the game crashed. And so it's definitely accessing the disks for something. When I finally managed to clean up the disk, and then I installed it onto a USB stick, so it's running off the hard drive and a USB stick instead of the game.
Well, you people talking about buying enough disks, I got the PlayStation downloaded, and it's fine for me because I have a 7200 RPM drive. But I mean, I've got 17 gigs, and it's all stream, it's all installed, but it's fine.
You know, it's kind of funny, speaking of, like, you know, our consoles and stuff like that, I was actually, like, pondering on getting, like, an SSD for my PS4. I mean, I don't know how much they are now, I know they're still prohibitively ridiculous, but holy crap, think about that.
Like, yeah, they're definitely coming down in price.
Yeah, they are.
You can get more for your buck now than you could a couple years
ago. How much would be, like, $100?
$100 would get you 128 gigs.
For SSD, really?
Probably.
Yeah, that cost about $250 when I was shopping.
Oh my god!
You might want to go a little higher. 256 is the sweet spot for a lot of people. You can get 512.
I can't wait to get a terabyte.
256 is pretty much the standard size for an SSD. 128 is you weren't really.
How much is like a 500 gigger right now for SSD?
About $1 gig, so you can get it for $500 regular price on sale. I've seen it as low as $350.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, they're finally getting to the right price range.
That's good.
It's a little bit further to go, but
yeah. But it's like, it's definitely something to think about, because if they're gonna start pushing a lot of installs and all that stuff, I mean, it's just natural to just think about SSD.
Yeah.
Even thinking about like hybrid drives, but I'm not sure how well they perform.
Well, the question is whether or not the PlayStation is gonna be able to deal with it. The PlayStation 3 did not deal with SSDs well at all. It treated them like regular hard drives.
Yeah.
It does seem like the PlayStation 4, although we have no proof to back this up, is gonna be able to deal with SSDs and read and write from them correctly.
Yeah.
Now, as for hybrid drives, we'd have to find out.
Yeah.
A hybrid drive works by taking the most commonly accessed data and putting it on the SSD portion. Mm. That's how Apple does it anyway. So who
knows? Is that OS controlled?
Yes.
Mm.
Although you can override it and say, nah, I want to do this instead.
Okay.
I wonder when the move occurs. Like, when does it decide this is a priority piece of data?
I hope so.
Well, it basically probably uses the same hash table system that your RAM's cache uses.
Well, what's interesting is we're all recording this on a MacBook Air, which does have an SSD. So, I mean, it's a
SSD!
So, we're almost there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of, like, computers and customization, what did you guys think about the Steam Box?
It has pretty high specs. Or low specs. Or specs in between, because it comes with a variety of configurations.
Mm-hmm.
But even the low-end specs, like, oh, that's pretty good.
I guess my question is this just a multimedia PC all over again?
No, maybe. I don't know. It depends really about SteamOS.
I need to get some hands-on time with it before I can really say anything, because it just seems really weird, especially that controller.
Oh, God. Let's not go into the controller yet, but, like, SteamOS, they announced that.
Yeah.
Linux-based. My whole problem is that, you know, every single piece of computer, like, software, like games, it's been wholly based off of Microsoft's DirectX. And that's been a play for them. That's why a lot of PC games thrive on Windows platforms. And the Xbox is because it's all based off of DirectX. And I remember, like, back in the 90s where John Carmack, like, was all beating the drum on, like, OpenGL and no one listened to him, you know? It's like, so how do you guys feel confident in
OpenGL?
Valve? Well, no, in general, Valve providing a similar architecture as DirectX.
Valve wouldn't provide a similar architecture to DirectX. If anything, they would do what they've already been doing, which is utilizing OpenGL. In fact, Valve has been working on OpenGL so hard, they've improved the OpenGL implementation of Left 4 Dead on DirectX, and OpenGL on Windows, and improved about 10 to 15%. In fact, Left 4 Dead on OpenGL runs better than Left 4 Dead on DirectX.
Wow.
That's a fact.
That's awesome.
So here's my question. There's this massive library, thousands and thousands of games on Steam.
So
what percentage of that library will actually be playable on a Steam Box?
If we're not counting about the whole streaming thing,
we're not. Let's not count that.
Because that's just not fair.
That's just
It has been announced by Valve that several AAA games are being ported to Linux. And confirmed. No, theirs are already on Linux. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding? It's been confirmed that BioShock Infinite is not one of them.
Ooh.
But you didn't answer my question. Like, of the existing library of Steam content, how much of it will actually be playable on the Steam Box?
Well, pretty much every indie game is Linux compatible, so ignoring that.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Go look.
I'm not going to look. I mean, we're talking about compatibility here. I mean, you know,
Because, I mean, they made this decision. They're going Linux.
Yeah.
They're doing it.
Yeah.
There are consequences. to that decision.
Exactly. Like, I don't, like, to be honest.
It's not like they've been preparing for these consequences. They've been getting more mileage out of DirectX than I think anyone thought possible. And so you have to remember that OpenGL.
Yeah.
OpenGL has never been really able to compete with DirectX until recently, and I think a lot of that is also the OpenAL library and a lot of the other extensions that have come out recently, especially for programmable pixel shaders.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think DirectX is leading the way, and then mm-hmm. I haven't seen as much of it. I mean, DirectX 11.1 looks nice. If you've played, what is it that looks good on Windows 8? Oh, Battlefield 4 is optimized mm-hmm. for Windows 8.
Right.
And that has some special Windows 8 features, because Windows 8 ships with DirectX 11.1.
Mm-hmm.
Boo.
Boo, Andy. Boo.
Yeah. But it's like, but that's kind of like what I'm saying is like, okay, so you have like thousands and thousands and thousands of games on the Windows platform.
Uh-huh.
Why would I spend $800 to just get a Steam box?
Yeah, I don't quite get it.
If I'm only going to get like 400 games out of the thousands.
And they say it's like, what the pricing for the thing would be? Or?
No.
Well, the Steam OS is free. You can build a box for it, right? I'm guessing. Like,
yeah, the SteamOS is going to be open source. You can put it on anything you want.
Right. So basically, whatever the box can play, you can, you know, it'll play.
So
but
is this something you have to build yourself?
No. There'll be boxes.
The Steam box is different. The Steam box is basically, we keep calling it Steam boxes. They're called
Steam machines.
Steam machines are basically a licensing contract where like basically Valve has to evaluate them and then like they
yeah.
can be called a Steam machine.
Possibly.
Yeah. So the way that it works is that and somebody builds a PC for spec for like whatever Valve's requiring,
mm-hmm.
and then they do whatever form factor or whatever it looks like, and then they submit it to Valve. They approve it, you know, kind of like the Nintendo seal of approval. It's like, yeah, this is the Valve seal of approval. This is a Steam machine now. Yay. You can call yourself that. We allow you to.
I don't have much faith in the Nintendo seal of approval.
No, not anymore. But, like, you know, so Steam OS is installed there, bam. It plays Steam games on Linux, which is where Ari and I are kind of, like, in the same boat. We're like, that's 400 games, dude. Like,
see, my question is, are they going to have some kind of, like, Windows emulation?
That's
a streaming thing.
Yeah, they've already got streaming.
That's the best they could do.
Streaming.
Okay.
So basically,
have you been not checking the news?
I don't know. I just haven't been that excited about it.
It's basically remote play for PC.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly, right? It's like, it's still, again, this unproven technology. That
yeah, I'm as skeptical of that as I am of Gaikai.
Gaikai, yeah.
So.
I know.
I saw another Gaikai demo.
Yeah, but it's
I'm
like...
sold.
Really?
I couldn't believe it.
Well,
they showed the controller.
Remember when they demoed on live at like GDC, and it's not like up to snuff, like with what we thought it was.
Well, when I was playing on live at E3, and they're showing off Super Street Fighter 4, and it was so bad, I think I walked away after a minute. It's like, wow, people actually think this is good. That's the thing; they won't know any better.
Yeah, but Gaikai is really that good.
From what I was able to see, if they weren't faking it in the video,
like could it do like a could it could you play like a Street Fighter tournament through it?
Probably not.
Actually, I'd give it a try. Probably not, though.
Probably not.
Yeah,
but
so,
Street Fighter tournaments, basically...
If it's not that good, it's not good.
All right, people buy special TVs for Street Fighter tournaments, so, I mean...
CRTs.
Yeah, that's fine.
No, not CRTs.
You understand
Asus
my point, though.
Asus VH-236s and Asus VH-238s.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean...
My point is, I want an immediate... No delay response like I would have with a regular controller.
Well,
okay.
You know, technically that's impossible, right?
Well, you know... It's got if it's not perfect, acid fooled
me
pretty damn well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that point's well taken care of. I think locally, like if you do, like let's say hypothetically, guys, think about this. Well, let's say they installed Gaikai onto a PS3.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm.
Which they will.
Which, and they allow you to stream PS3 games from that to the PS4.
Right.
That wouldn't be a problem. That's local area network. But if we're talking about, like, from another server outside of
your home, be fun.
And we're not talking about what's the point of actually doing that.
Right. But that's something that they want to... But that's something they want to do.
Is that so that, like, you can have your game on a different screen or something? If the system's
No. This is how they're dealing with backwards compatibility.
Yeah.
It's all streaming. So
basically, you have to have both consoles.
No. These are two different things I'm talking about.
All right, you're confusing me.
Okay. Let's go back to example one. Example one. Hypothetical example one. Let's say they installed Gaikai on your PS3.
Right.
It acts as a server.
Mm-hmm.
The client is the PS4.
Mm-hmm.
So you put your PS3 game on your PS4, you play it.
Right.
No lag, because it's local air network.
Or at least or minimal. Download it to or your minimal. PS3.
No, yeah, don't even fucking talk about that. I'm talking about the hypothetical of if you have a PS3, you stream the video from your PS3 to your PS4, and that's how you do backwards compatibility. That's
it. So you actually need the PS3 to be running.
This is hypothetical. This is not even a Sony thing. Okay. This is what I'm thinking could happen. Because really, Gaikai is server client technology, right? What Sony is actually proposing for a Gaikai is that my guess for the library is they'll look at your downloaded library, how many PS3 games you've downloaded, or PS2 or whatever. That'll be available for Gaikai to stream on your PS4. So let's say you boot up Gaikai app or whatever like that. You look at your game list and say, oh, hey, you downloaded Shadow of the Colossus for PS3. You can stream that.
So they're going to have like an army of servers that are going to be sending out all these games.
Like online.
Just like online, which is why I'm really skeptical about it. But again, we cannot forget that Gaikai is server client technology.
But this will still only be as good as your internet connection.
Yep.
But remember, it's server client technology. They could be doing something similar as what Steam machines are doing. Whereas they're just like, oh, you have a PS3, let's install Gaikai there, like server software, stream that shit to your PS4, you don't have to plug in your PS3 ever again. You know? Like, you can access your PS3 remotely from your PS4 to run that stuff, and then, you get what I'm saying? Because really, like, the way that Steam machines work is you need a fully capable PC to render high-resolution graphics for, like, Borderlands 2 on, like, a box that probably can't even run a tenth of it, right? So, meaning it's just a video displayer, you know? So, all the box is doing over there, the big box, is basically, like, saying, all right, I'm processing all the video, here you go! That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say, Gaikai can do the exact same thing, because Gaikai is a server client technology. So, that's the potential of this. Not only that, remember the Gaikai is being installed on the Vita also.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this, we're talking about, and remember how Sony is saying about like, oh, we want you to be able to access your games anywhere. This is how they're going to do it.
Gaikai, what are they doing for physical copies of games?
Physical copies? What do you mean?
What's a physical copy?
So I have, say, with Gaia 3 on my PS3.
With the current Sony plan, not minding the positing that I was doing, nothing.
So
didn't buy it digitally, you're fucked.
There you go.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying is I'm pretty sure they have that in the back of their mind. So I wouldn't put it past them to install something on the PS3 and be like, you don't have to sell your PS3. If you have all your PS3 games, just pop it in there.
Put it on a separate TV and turn it into an entertainment box.
So you're saying I should put my Disgaea 3 game into my PS4 and then with it in the drive, Sony will allow me to stream?
Maybe. I don't know.
They can't. Here's the problem. This is actually something that... the thing is, if you've heard about what Sony's doing with the PlayStation 3 to PlayStation 4 upgrade system, you need to keep your Battlefield 4 disc for PlayStation 3.
Mm-hmm.
Then there'll be a code that allow you to buy the digital version for $10.
Mm-hmm.
In order to play the digital version for $10, you need to put your PlayStation 3 disc in the drive.
Yeah.
This is because the PlayStation 3 disc is going to have the same technology for, let's say, PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale used.
Mm-hmm.
To have a one-time use code on the disc.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't printed. So unless you've got that kind of technology on the disc, I don't see any way that you're going to have that ability.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe, but I kind of doubt it.
I mean, that's actually a good suggestion. Like, if you had the game on your PS3, you have the physical copy of it, you put it in your PS4, it detects, like, oh, you have that game, let me stream it from Gaikai.
Right.
That's actually a good option. I never thought of that.
I don't know. I can't see why they wouldn't do it. I mean,
I can't see how they could.
I mean,
RFID tags.
But I mean, seriously, you take the game out of the drive, they won't let you use it anymore.
Exactly.
So it's not like they have to worry about you sharing with your friends.
It was funny, like when we were talking about the $10 upgrade thing, and Sean was so insensitized by it. I'm like, but if they didn't do that, then what you would do is you'd basically take that same PS3 copy of Battlefield 4. Take it to Ari's house, have him install it, buy the game for $10, leave. You know, it's like
What happened with PlayStation All Stars. You could they wanted to make sure you couldn't give your
friend
Vita copy to someone else.
Exactly,
you can't.
Yeah, yeah. It makes a lot of sense.
Not really.
It makes a lot of sense from that standpoint. So okay, so we talked about Steam machines. Like, I mean, Steam Machines is pretty much just a client-server architecture, you know, kind of thing, where it's like, if your Steam Machine isn't as powerful as any other, you know, gaming PC out there, well, it can stream stuff to your TV. Yay, whatever. You know, it's basically like a Roku box, if anything. Steam Machine's controller, though, I don't know how I feel about that thing.
Well, here's the thing. Would you rather have them redo the Xbox controller?
Yep.
Why? You know you could do? Go out and buy an Xbox controller.
I don't know. I mean, I'm fine with them having their own controller, but those face pad things, I don't know.
There's no tactile feedback from what I've heard. So, like, basically when you touch something, I mean, it does vibrate, but it's easy. I could imagine your fingers, like, being lost on the positioning on the pad.
Yeah, I think a lot of
people... On the touchpad. We're not talking about the analog thingies,
talking about the analog thing.
Oh, no, they do have tactile feedback.
I mean, is it going to feel like they're four individual face buttons?
Oh, yeah, they do. Did you not hear? They did?
No.
They do.
They said no.
No, they said yes.
My question is, if I'm holding that thing, am I going to be able to move my thumb across that pad and feel four buttons?
Nope.
And know when I'm pushing them in?
Oh, no.
It's nothing like
that.
I mean, that's the thing that people are going to miss from these controls.
Yeah, there's no real meant to be buttons. It's not meant to be pressed as a button. It's meant to be used as an analog stick, so to speak.
So it's all triggers and, like, here. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Did you see the videos?
No, I didn't.
They showed Portal 2.
Well, of course they're going to use their own fucking games on there.
No, they show Portal 2.
RTSs.
Well, you're not letting me finish.
Okay.
I'm letting you finish.
Go.
Civ 5.
Says Ted.
Go ahead.
Civ 5.
Yeah.
Civ 5. They played it with Civ 5, the controller.
Uh-huh.
Civ 5. It was good. They showed it. You should watch it.
So
the left stick zooms in and out, and the right stick moves the mouse.
Well, yeah. I mean, the controller is obviously built for something like that. But...
It's more like a keyboard-mouse alternative.
Show me somebody playing Minecraft. Show me somebody playing like an indie game.
They've said certain games. Like, I talked to Mike Z from Lab Zero, who designed Skullgirls, and he said that controller was not designed for fighting games, and he's totally right.
Right.
But because you're going to have an arcade stick, for Christ's sake.
Well,
I don't think there's going to be. They want to make a one-size-fits-all approach for controllers, which on the console, that's the best we've got because they need a one-size-fits-all.
Right.
And this is their approach to it for PC gaming. But I think PC gaming is broad enough that you can't make a one-size-fits-all. So they want to make a one-size-fits-everything-else that hasn't already been hit by other controllers. And I think that's the right approach.
So it's not meant to replace your Xbox 360 USB.
Hell no!
But the thing is, like, the mouse and keyboard is already a perfect thing for it.
Yeah, on your lap? When you're sitting on the couch?
There's a phantom lap board.
Yeah, that...
I'm fucking around. But you know what I mean? It's like, if I have a coffee table, like where this laptop is,
mm-hmm.
I have all the surface that I could ever have. And this is a $20 fucking table. So, I mean, yeah, I don't have the luxury of being able to use a controller. But a majority of games on Steam support the Xbox controller. Which, by the way, like, a lot of the games that are built for that controller play well with that controller.
Yeah.
Like, if you're telling me that, you know, like, oh, yeah, you have the ability to play, you know, like, I don't know, for the lack of a better, you know, thing, Spelunky with the Steam Machine controller, it's like, what, would you really want to? I mean, it's like, that's another question that, you know, is kind of crossed. But I understand that it's a necessity for certain PC games. Like, RTS is great. You know, first-person shooter is fine. But there's other... You know, like, if you're building this thing for, like, PC gamers, they've already made up their mind. They're going to keep their fucking mouse and keyboard. There's no way. So, I guess my thing is, I don't see who this is for.
Yeah, I agree. I have no idea.
You know what I mean? It's like, we already have two kinds of controller setups on the PC.
I don't see who the Steam Box is for. I don't see who the controller is for. I don't get it at all.
I get what the Steam Box, the Steam Machine is for. The controller, I have no idea. Like, that's really, like, kind of, like, the big question mark here. Like, so far, I feel like they mean well with the Steam Machines. So, basically, like, let's say you're in your den, and you're playing your games there. But let's say, you know, your girlfriend wants to see it, hypothetically, like, on the big screen TV and play it, you know, hypothetically, right?
Even as a hypothetical, that's a stretch, but okay.
Well, yes. You know, you have the option to. If you have a small Steam Box, which basically, you know, like, talks to your PC and says, like, all right, let's just... forward all the information there, and you can play it on a big screen TV using, you know, like big box mode and all that stuff, which is great. At least you have that option. So your entertainment could be in multiple places.
Well, I will just say, you know, I do have a lot of faith in Valve. I think they're an incredible company that have made a lot of great products, and generally they push our medium forward more than they push
usually.
It back.
Yeah.
So, as skeptical as I am about this, I'm curious to see how it actually performs.
Are you going to put any skin in the game? Are you going to buy anything?
No. I'm not going to buy it. I mean, I have no need for it. I'm happy with, like Alex said, I mean, your PC gamers already got their keyboard and mouse, and I personally have my Xbox 360 controller to plug into it. What the hell do I need a Steam box for? I've already got a gaming PC. I've already got
all
the controllers.
Well,
that
said, if you have a gaming PC and you can hook it up to your TV, there's no need to buy a Steam box.
But a lot of PC gamers already have decided that the best way they can play a game is, like, in front of their monitor, where they can actually have, like, higher resolution than a TV.
Go with price.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, it's an odd decision. I mean, there is a convenience factor to it, don't get me wrong. I mean, I understand Valve's intentions with it. But it's not just going to play Steam games. I mean, they're also courting, like, different video rental. So it's basically like a Roku box.
Netflix
really
wants to be on another thing.
Yeah,
yay.
It's like a PC console.
And I'm totally fine with that idea, you know? But it's just, you know,
I guess they're just trying to define living room PC.
Yeah, again, which is why I brought up earlier when we're talking about this, is this going to be another multimedia PC? Is this going to be the mid to late 90s again, where it's like somebody's trying to do another one of those multimedia PC things?
If any company could get away with it, it's Valve, but I still don't see it happening.
And not on Linux.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest bullish thing, like, I've heard, is like, Linux.
You know,
it's like, you know what, this is my approach to it. When I first heard the news, I'm like, if you're going to do this route, might as well try to get fucking Mac on, you know, on anything. Because, you know, I don't know how many games there are in each library, like, you know, how many games there are on Steam Mac versus Steam Linux, but it's probably comparable.
Well, think about this. We have, what's the percentage of computer users that are on PCs versus Mac versus Linux?
Well, obviously, like, really high on PCs.
Right. I don't know what the exact percentages are.
Hey.
But think of something else. Think of Internet Explorer and their market share and how much that has changed over the years. I think Valve is trying to make Linux a viable operating system.
For gaming?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll admit that.
I mean, look what Google did with Chrome.
Yeah.
I mean, their OS hasn't really done much.
Well,
the little Chromebooks.
Oh, yeah.
But,
well, they also made another OS called Android, and that seems to be doing fine.
But they've certainly completely taken over the web browser field. I mean,
Chrome
Internet Explorer is like, what, 10% now?
Yeah.
And they were the market share. So, I mean, it's possible that Linux can make that kind of change,
and
I just doubt it.
And let's not forget that, you know, before Valve, they were part of Microsoft, so they have their chops on something. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So, I think, we'll give credit where credit's due. If they really kind of, you know, change the landscape of PC gaming, more power to them. But I don't see how they can do it at 1080p. There are PC gamers love their high resolutions.
Oh yeah,
yeah. If you're telling me that they can't get that on a TV,
even stop at 1080p. They
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's why I said, like, who the fuck is the Steam machine for?
Yeah.
Because PC gamers are so anal retentive about resolution and anti-aliasing and running smoothly that if you can't even give that to them on a fucking TV, why would I spend another $500 for that?
Yeah.
You know, that's all where I'm coming from.
All right. Well, there you go. Steam box.
Steam machines. Okay. So, I want to take this time to address one really important thing, which is, I was the last person who basically said here that I'm going to be buying the Xbox One for everybody. Not like, I'm not going to buy everybody an Xbox One, but I was going to buy one and take a hit for the team. Well, shit happened, and it's not happening anymore. And the reason, and I wanted to kind of take this opportunity to talk about why we picked the PS4. You know, like, I know that a lot of this is kind of like our emotional kind of journey through E3 and all that stuff. But, like, I wanted to kind of ask you guys, like, how do we wind up picking the PS4?
Come out first.
Okay, that's one.
I feel like the messaging that Microsoft has been giving with the Xbox One has gone so far as to sour me on the entire Xbox brand.
And that's the most important thing.
Chris, I'm talking.
Sorry.
Oh, come on. Come on.
Everyone is always interrupting me when I'm the smartest one.
Okay.
I totally am.
That's debatable. Anyways, oh, go ahead.
And I feel like that I actually feel embarrassed to own an Xbox 360, and I feel like the brand has been poisoned to the point where I don't want a console fanboy, but I'm kind of don't like Xbox at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have officially...
Somebody's saying who's serious, the one who sold their Xbox 360 and all their games. Yeah.
I have sold my copy of Injustice on Xbox 360.
Whoa.
Primarily because I'm going to get it on PS4,
mm-hmm.
but also because I've been looking to get it away from Xbox for the longest time.
Wow. I did not know this.
Yeah, once the announcement for PS4 came out, I'm like, yes!
Yeah.
I don't even care about Halo. Heck, I'm binging Killzone right now because I'm like, I gotta purge Halo from my system.
Ah, I feel that way too. But that I am glad I got rid of my 360 just because of that.
And you know what's gonna happen when, because I prepaid for years and years of Xbox Live Gold, but years and years is actually running out finally after years and years.
You still got 3 years though, right?
It's been 3 years.
Oh. Oh, wow.
You can prepay for up to 3 years in advance of Xbox Live.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually coming due next year.
Interesting.
And I won't be renewing. Because PlayStation Plus does require me to pay for multiplayer now. Mm-hmm. But they give me thousands of dollars a year in games.
Yeah.
The value is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah. No, I totally agree.
The reason I am getting the PlayStation 4 is probably because of just how E3 went down.
Yeah.
I mean... We watched all those press conferences, and we waited till the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Sony did their thing. They did their undercut.
I will never let Sean up with that. I would never, never! Sean, you hear this? You will never hear the end of it. Never!
Anyway, I was happy enough with the lineup, with the undercut, with the hardware, and with everything else that I pre-ordered then, and... You know, it's been several months since E3, and we're nearly at release date, and... Mm-hmm. Microsoft has done nothing to convince me that I made a bad decision. So that's pretty much it. I don't have anything against the Xbox One. I don't even have anything against the Xbox 360. I'm okay with both of the current generation consoles. Or I say both.
You know,
I mean, Nintendo does exist. I'm reminding you. But in any case, I mean, I do want an Xbox One, but I don't...
Not at 500.
Not at 500, and not until there's an exclusive killer app I must have.
Mm-hmm.
The PlayStation 4 I'm happy enough just getting, even without a specific game that I need to have. I still want the system. It's going to be fun, and I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't even know why. There's no answer. I mean, I'm a PC gamer. I don't need any consoles, really, except for the exclusive games.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing on PS4 or Xbox One at launch that I have to have.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still on board with PS4.
How much of it is the promise of like great RPGs coming for the PlayStation 4?
Not
have
much.
Have you noticed that the RPGs are never a launch title on any platform?
Yeah, of course not. Ever.
Yeah.
So the promise of it is,
Well, the promise of like a Sony platform versus an Xbox platform is that you will see JRPGs on that platform because the market penetration of for Sony systems in Japan, you know, they're not going to make one for the Xbox and like have like what like 1,000 people buy it versus like 10,000 to 100,000 people. So at the very like for me, you know, my investment on the PS4 was all about, you know, how much can everybody contribute as a whole. I know that Japan is definitely going to back it up because it's a Japanese platform with RPGs and, you know, SRPGs or whatever. Like, whatever Japanese, like, dominated genre there is. I know Europe's going to do it because, you know, like, they have, you know, I think that Sony has pretty much covered the whole development spectrum of making it easy to develop for. And, you know, the West, well, you have, like, the local first parties to support, you know? So so that's my thing. But how about you, Chris?
You know what? Once I got rid of the 360, I really wasn't interested in getting an Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been trying to get rid of that 360 for a long time. I didn't like paying for Xbox Live. I hardly used it.
Mm-hmm.
And I also looked at it as practicality. What does the Xbox offer that PlayStation doesn't?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really see anything.
And didn't they just really? I mean, I don't know about how you feel about, you know, the Xbox experience for the platform. I mean, didn't it just get worse like over time? Like we went from the blades all the way up to what we have now, which is filled with advertising.
Yeah. So much. Oh, there's new advertising now. Really? If you do a Bing search for something on Xbox, you'll get ads now.
Oh, shit. Really?
Yep. Thank you, NeoGAF.
Yeah. Amazing.
For me, there wasn't, you know, there was no reason to get an Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, except for the games, but I'm trying to let those pass.
You know, one of the things that's making me more confident in the PS4 is actually the Vita. And it's
really?
And its operating system.
Huh.
I mean, I think that's the Vita has a great OS. And,
they have announced... sorry, I'm the one interrupting them.
Yes.
Thank you. Saying what I've been meaning to say for about a year now.
Okay.
But yeah, the Vita operating system is so smooth and so responsive and so great at multitasking compared to the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360, which are both just slow and clunky. I mean, as much as they've tried to improve these systems over the years, they are just horrible operating systems, both of them. I'm sorry. But the Vita gave me some faith that Microsoft is going to produce a good OS for the PS4.
You mean Sony.
I mean, Microsoft's got
their work. That would be something, right?
I mean, Microsoft's got their work cut out for them, but especially with all the Kinect interfacing they're going to be trying to do. But, I don't know, I think Sony's going to do pretty good this generation.
I think so, too. I mean, you know, it's funny because Cerny has been denying that he had any hand on the Vita, but, you know, like, it came out recently in an interview from Shuhei Yoshida that he did have a hand on the Vita, and that's a really good, like, way to show, like, all right, well, this is what you can have for your next generation system. And that's why I don't get a lot of people when I talk to them saying, like, well, Sony has to prove something. And I'm like, don't you have the Vita? And it's like, yeah, but there's not a lot of games. I'm like, but you're talking about the infrastructure of the system. It's pretty solid, right? And they're like, yeah. So I don't know how else you want them to prove anything. Because really, like, what's going to boil down to is how can Sony sway those people on Microsoft's camp out of, you know, because the biggest thing that I've talked to people about is how all their friends are on the Xbox. That's why they want to stick to it. That is the number one reason why people don't want to switch to the PS4.
And Sean likes trophies.
Yeah, and Sean likes
achievements. Not trophies.
Yeah, Sean hates trophies.
He
likes achievements.
Yeah, yeah, that's
completely backwards.
Well, the system's set up. I think that the system of achievements is set up a little better than the trophies.
Why? Because of the points.
Yeah.
I think
that's the big difference.
The gamer score, basically, is a lot of people care about the gamer score, which is fine.
I actually don't like the points because there's an 1,000-point must system for games, but with the trophy system, you can give the appropriate points to the things that deserve it. Otherwise, you end up on Xbox with things like Avatar, where you have 5 achievements and they're each 200 points. Whereas on PlayStation, there's a variable number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't really like the achievement system doesn't really necessarily correlate with like the things that you do in the game sometimes. It's like it's sometimes arbitrary. You know, like the Avatar example that you said. And to me, like, the trophy system is kind of neat because it has that kind of grindy RPG kind of system. But I guess that's just us, right? Not Sean.
Well, the thing about trophies also, I like to get my level up. Oh, and I like the concept of the platinum trophy, which is something Xbox does not do, which is get all the trophies and we give you an even bigger trophy.
Yeah.
And that was one of the reasons I played Dead or Alive 5 as much as I did.
Yeah.
That has Dead or Alive 5 Ultimate has a very, relatively, but if you're a fighting game fan, it's one of the easiest platinums you'll ever go for. Mm-hmm. It's guaranteed.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, there's a lot of good games coming out for the Xbox One, but let's be honest, like, between the 5 of us, I mean, aren't we just going to cover, like, the third parties at this point? I mean, and I know we're going to cover some of the Sony ones, like, right?
Killzone.
Yeah, the Killzone. But it's like, and if I only know of really one game that if I had an Xbox One that at least one of us would want to try out, which is Killer Instinct.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I'm the only one who cares about Forza. I mean, yeah, and maybe you have an interest in Dead Rising 3, maybe? No?
Yeah, I'd say a little about that.
Little?
Yeah.
Not like...
I was disappointed in the first one. Never played the second one, but this one looks a lot better.
Right.
Dying Light blows that up.
But that's a third party. They'll come up in, you know, all the other platforms. So, I mean, really, what we're saying here is that the first parties, you know, like the exclusive stuff on the Xbox side, you know, is just not that appealing. Is that what it is? Because, I mean, to me, like, okay, so, yeah, Sean's going to get, like, Xbox One for Titanfall, and then he's going to basically, like, make that his primary platform.
Which... Until they come out with Titanfall on PlayStation 4.
Did he really say that? I don't think he's...
No, he didn't, but Titanfall is coming out on PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
I know that they've said it's an Xbox exclusive. Yeah, it is, for 1 year. What do you think is going to happen next?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but I think that, if I remember correctly, Sean said that, it, you know, the Xbox One is going to be his primary platform.
You know what the bizarre thing is?
What?
Like, of all the consoles that are out, that are going to be out this holiday season,
mm-hmm.
the one that has the most exclusives that I'm interested in is the Wii U.
Hmm.
You're still not going to buy a Wii U, though.
I don't know why I'm getting a PS4. I really don't. At least not at launch. I have no idea why. I can't figure it out. I got so swept up on the hype train over E3.
Mm-hmm.
Got that pre-order seconds before Ted did, and I'll always have that. Thank you. But, shit, what the fuck am I getting it for? I don't know what game I'm buying that system for. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I bought it before...
Keep going.
I bought it before I had any games I wanted, and I just figured it would naturally fall into place. That's what I did with the Wii U, and I kind of lucked out with the Wii U, but for PlayStation 4, I've got Injustice, which is a recent game. I've got Battlefield 4. I've got Watch Dogs. I'm very excited for Battlefield 4. And then what you have to remember, the number of games that Sony is going to have on day one keeps going up because of all the indies,
yeah.
which Xbox has none of. Like, the sheer... Like, Dive Kick is now going to be launched on... Dive Kick! I've already owned that. I'm going to buy it again. I don't know. Pinball Arcade is going to be close to launch. That's another game I'll buy again, but they look different. Original games include Resogun, Octodad,
I wonder how... forgive the pun. I wonder how long its legs are.
Oh, man. You know, there were... Blacklight looks like a lot of good fun. Warframe. I'm going to give Warframe a try for a completely unrelated reason. Warframe is made by a company called Digital Extremes, who are responsible for the miracle pulled with the PC version of Bioshock 2. So I kind of want to give them a shout-out by trying out Warframe.
There you go.
By the way, unrelated, but since Alex stepped out, I got a word on what the next game that's going to have Games for Windows Live removed is. And I have a potential date for that. And this is all rumor, but I've told a lie. It's actually games, plural. And if you can't get the hint, it's October 25th is when Batman Arkham Origins comes out.
Right.
So Arkham Asylum and Arkham City may have their Games for Windows Live removed on October 25th.
And it's the same thing if you have your game key, you just plug it into Steam and you get the new version?
Can't speak to that, but however, there is something I do know. The Game of the Year edition of Arkham City and Arkham Asylum are the only ones available at this point. So the rumor has it that if you had those versions, basically what's going to happen is if you don't have the Game of the Year version of Arkham City, you may be upgraded to it at no additional cost.
Cool. Interesting.
So that could happen on October 25th. That is a rumor. However, as Bioshock was rumored for the longest time, and then it came true, and the same process is being done for the Batman games, you might as well just draw your own conclusions. After that is probably going to be the indie title Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet, as they said publicly, yeah, we want to remove it, and now we can, so stay tuned.
Hmm.
After that, we know that Street Fighter is going to remove it in an unusual way, and that they won't remove it at all, they're just going to put out a new game.
Mm-hmm.
About Street Fighter Cross Tekken, we don't know about that, but they've said, yeah, we know. We know.
Mm.
As you know, Capcom has completely converted over to Steamworks, their first game being Devil May Cry, DMC. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Great game, by the way. Oh, God.
That's really cheap right now on Steam.
Actually, it was cheaper. Yesterday it was 75% off.
What, today it's 50?
Yeah, yesterday was the last day to get it. Today the deal is Resident Evil 6.
$10, right?
$10. But that does use Steamworks.
They'll probably go back down to 75% off over
eventually.
Oh, over the Christmas sale?
Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But it's a Capcom weekend right now. I'm kind of waiting for 75% off on Remember Me. Oh, and if you haven't noticed, Lost Planet 3 has already gotten a permanent price reduction to $40 on the consoles.
Yeah, thanks for the review copy, by the way, Capcom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not that it needed it.
No, you know.
We get that Price is Right jingle into every episode.
We really need to put that in.
What?
The womp, womp, womp.
Yeah. We don't have the budget. But
what I was talking about, one of the advantages that PlayStation 4 has is the sheer number of indie titles they'll have at launch, increasing the...
Launch lineup
to like 30 or 40 games.
Oh my God.
And maybe we should use this to segue into IndieCade?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so IndieCade. And so you two, Ari and Ted, you guys have been there for like all three fucking days.
I was the only one there for all 3 days.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't go on Sunday. I had my
Or Friday.
I was there on Friday.
You were?
I remember.
And then we peaced out. We were like, we're not going to stick around for the beer.
Yeah.
but we didn't.
But yeah, IndieCade was fun.
IndieCade had a large presence from Sony, which was showing off some upcoming PS3, PS4, and PS Vita games.
Mm-hmm.
It also had a very big presence by Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
And the booth from Nintendo looked kind of reminded me of the E3 booth, the way they had all of the consoles set up.
Yeah.
Except every game was an indie game.
How was Microsoft showing?
What showing? Microsoft did not have a booth.
Okay.
So, there you go.
They're so ready. Anyways.
So that's one of the first places I went to, Nintendo's booth.
Mm-hmm.
That's really sweet t-shirts to give out.
Yeah, I didn't stick around for the t-shirts because I'll admit the one day that I went, I was actually completely hungover and I was like, all right, I've seen everything that I can. I'm going to go home.
The Nintendo booth, I think the big game that people were really crowded around, Shovel Knight.
Yep, that was a lot of fun.
Shovel Knight is a game with 8-bit aesthetic.
With Mega Man-ish.
Mega Man-ish aesthetic. You play as a knight who fights with a shovel. He can stab and he can also down poke with it.
Yeah, it's a lot like Zelda 2.
Zelda 2, exactly.
That's what actually came into my mind when I saw it.
Yeah.
And it's a side-scroller.
Mm-hmm.
And it just plays fun. It doesn't use the gamepad in any unique ways. It's just off-TV play.
And can you play it on the screen and stuff? Yes,
off-TV play.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah, I keep forgetting like the terminologies for that thing.
Yeah,
it definitely plays a lot like Zelda 2. Looks like Mega Man, except there's this whole thing where you actually dig up treasure as you're playing.
Yeah, there's like piles of treasure, and you just mash as hard as you can, dig it up.
Wow.
Yeah.
What else did you like? What looked good was Cube, Q-U-B-E. That's a game that's been out on other platforms, but it just looks nice on Wii U. Just it's weird to see games that look like in HD on a Nintendo platform. I still feel that way.
Yeah.
The what else is good on the Nintendo booth? They had a 3DS section as well as the Wii U section. Mm-hmm. They had the new, not the kickstarted Shantae game, but Shantae the Pirate's Curse
or the third one. Oh, okay,
the third one in the series, which is coming out soon on 3DS.
Okay,
so that was good. I played some RPGs coming out.
Yeah,
there was Grinzia.
What's that? The Kickstarter one.
The Pier Solar.
That one's going to be on Dreamcast.
Yeah, Dreamcast.
Yeah, that started off as a Dreamcast
project. No, it started off as a Genesis project. 2010.
That's right.
So that is getting there were a lot of games. There was 1001 Spikes, which was also on PS4 at the Sony booth.
Mm-hmm.
They had Knit Underground, which is a game already out on Vita and PS3, and I hate it to death, but they're getting it. What else did they have? Oh, that game, like Space Kitty and the one where the cat was on rails. And the cat, pops out and talks to you. I can't even remember that one.
I must have missed that one.
That's several games.
Are we still talking about, the non-Firehouse, stuff?
Yeah, we're not even at the Firehouse. Right, okay. Then there was a Sony's booth all had Rezogun, mm-hmm. which looks great.
Yeah.
That's going to be free for PlayStation Plus.
Yes. What was that Loco Roco looking game?
The racing game?
No.
What the hell's it called?
Pohokum.
Yeah, Pohokum. That was really fun.
That was fun to play, really peaceful. Yeah,
how does it play?
I couldn't tell you, and I played 30 minutes of it.
It's not Nobi Nobi Boy or something?
No.
I mean, kind of, because you have this thing that's...
Yeah,
you're flying around, and you can do whatever you want, and it feels good.
You just basically...
There's no time limit.
There's just a lot of interacting with things and watching things happen, and then eventually you beat the level.
Sounds like Nobi Nobi Boy.
But you can't eat your own butthole.
I think it has much more clear objectives than Nobi Nobi Boy.
That is true, even though sometimes the objectives aren't clear.
Yeah.
What else did I like at the Sony booth? They had Blacklight. They had several PS4 games. They had a new build of Octodad.
Did they?
Oh, yeah, there's a scene that happens. You wake up from remembering your wedding, and then you have to go, grill burgers and serve burgers to your children.
And
mow the lawn.
Okay, we can't deny that the impact of Octodad at the Sony booth there was huge. There was still a huge crowd there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that game is going to sell.
I think all it needs to sell is a demo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just one demo. Just give us, the freaking wedding demo, and it's sold. I mean, that made people look over your shoulder like it was crazy.
What are you playing there? Octodad? And then you're off to the races.
Yeah,
I wonder how good people are going to get at that game.
Oh my god, that's
going to be scary.
You got that share button? You know, I even said this to the Sony rep there. You know what's going to happen with that share button you got in that PlayStation 4? Octodad speedruns. Aw, yeah. Man. And then I said to someone else, Divekick had a showing there. Divekick on PS4, which, by the way, exactly the same graphics. But I said to him, you know, everybody who has a PS4 and an Xbox One is going to have a Twitch channel now. Mm-hmm. That's terrible.
I'm still not quite sure if there's going to be a charge from Twitch to use it.
I don't...
Mm. Has Twitch ever charged?
No.
Then I don't think so.
We'll see.
That would be a terrible idea if they did.
Of course, they go get their money off people watching your channel. They got to watch an ad. That's how they make money.
That's how they make money.
Unless you subscribe to Twitch Turbo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What else did we see at the Sony booth? I played another round of Blacklight. It's the same.
Mm-hmm.
Looks good. They didn't have Warframe. That's not really an indie, though.
Yeah.
I played some PlayStation Mobile games. I played a game called 10x8. Which is available.
Yeah.
It's a puzzle game. Mm-hmm. And then I played Hermit Crab in Space, but I played that at the Firehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I highly recommend it. I mean, I went home, I bought it, and I was really happy with it.
Oh, yeah, it's out, right?
Yeah, it's right now.
Okay.
If I could find my memory card with it on it, which I've lost.
So the Firehouse games, these are where the finalists are.
Yes, that's where the people who are up for awards go.
Mm-hmm. Rogue Legacy was there.
Rogue Legacy was there, but I didn't vote for it.
Okay.
Towerfall won.
I thought it was Quadrilateral Cowboy.
Towerfall won some award.
Quadrilateral Cowboy. That was interesting.
Yeah. What did you think of it?
I played 30 Flights of Lovin' before, mm-hmm. which is by the same developer.
Right.
The visual style of it was immediately the same, mm-hmm. exactly the same. But the gameplay was like all about hacking into stuff, and you actually have to kind of go into a DOS prompt and type out commands to open doors and to get things to work. Mm-hmm. And there's an interesting puzzle mechanic where, like, you have to put in a series of commands so that the gates will open in the proper order so that an object can get through a tube or whatever without getting blocked. And you have like, 3-second windows to do a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's really game of the show to me, but...
That was kind of weird how, like, all of a sudden, like, every single critic there was like, this is game of the show, and I'm like... It's a good game.
I don't have a lot of respect for the journalists I saw at IndieCade. They're all terrible at games.
Really?
When I was in line for Rollers of the Realm, which is another game I think we can all talk about,
the guy in front
of me just sucked out loud. Sucked! And I'm talking to the guy, I was like, why are journalists so bad at games? The guy made it. I blazed through in about a fifth of the time it took him to beat it.
Yeah.
Rollers of the Realm, though, pinball RPG.
That is the one that I basically put down on my piece of paper.
I almost did for that one.
Yeah, that was like... There's no doubt Rollers of the Realm was, like, my game of the show.
It was pretty good. I mean, I don't know. I want to play more of it.
You didn't even play it. That's the problem.
I saw my fair share of it. I mean, I watched the entire demo through Ted.
My complaint of that game is that I asked him, so what are your real-life pinball influences? He said, I don't have any. I just, you know, played Zen Pinball. Like, what?
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell because he didn't have some basic pinball mechanics
mm-hmm.
programmed in the game. It was controlled with an Xbox controller, and when I pushed a trigger halfway, all my flippers flipped.
Mm-hmm.
Only my primary flipper should flip, and I had to explain this to him,
yeah.
and hopefully he'll put it in the game.
Well, my issue, I mean, I like the game overall. I like that, you know, you have multiple characters in the different balls that you can switch between, that each one of them has different physics and abilities.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like the level design, where you're like, you have a lot of flippers in some levels. Literally, like, some flippers have 10.
Oh my
some
God,
levels have,
yes,
like, 10 flippers.
Mm-hmm.
But
more than that.
I also didn't feel enough pinball.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, open. Some of the areas are too open, or some
or
areas
too
are too close.
It's like,
there's no ramps. I can't do, like, any sweet loops.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I'm thinking about. Like, ramps and loops and objectives and bumpers and things like that. There's a little bit of all of that. Like, the ramp will be like, say, a wheelbarrow to get you on top of a rooftop. There will be another flipper to get you across the roofs.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you stealth around, apparently.
Yeah.
But it was cool and interesting, and I want to play more of it. But I want to see a lot more pinball-ish stuff in there.
Right. Because I was talking to him and stuff, because I said, like, okay, well, obviously you have Pinball Quest is one of your biggest influences. And in fact, like, when I mentioned that, they just went nuts.
Right.
Like, they were like, oh my God, you got it! And I'm like,
yeah,
it's the only one that's out there, you know? But then, like, I asked him, like, so in Pinball Quest, in the first board, You know, like literally like went all the way back to my memory, Pinball Quest. So the first board, your first enemies are these like walking like skeletons.
Right, and they kind of reassemble when you hit them.
Right, why aren't these walking? It's like, well, they wanted to kind of get the use of like, you know, get used to like the whole pinball thing for like newbies. And I'm like, okay. So and then they taught me the whole nudge function. I'm like, I don't know about the whole nudge function because you can easily abuse it. And what the nudge function is, it's kind of like they don't have a tilt. What they do is, what they have is something called a nudge, where if the ball is in play, you know, like every time that it's in play, you can actually nudge it to a specific direction once. So, and then when you basically get back to the flippers and all that stuff, or to a surface, then you can nudge it again.
Yeah.
So, that's interesting and all, but like, I think I get what you guys are saying, that it's too much of not pinball.
Yeah.
And I feel also that a lot of the boards that they have is too wide, as it, you know, versus long.
Well, we talked to them about that. They were saying basically that because of the way modern televisions are, the aspect ratio that we're really used to, which is 16:9, that they chose to have boards where the left side of the screen is going to be like the more difficult section of the board, which would normally be the top part of the pinball table, okay. And the right side of the screen is going to be like the bottom part of the board, where it, you know, that's kind of what they went for. So
that's, I don't know how I feel about that, because like Pinball Arcade does like a really good job of scrolling up and down the board.
Yeah,
you know, like
yeah, most of the scrolling in Rollers of the Realm is more like Pinball Quest, where you basically go to a new section of the board when it's
But even in Pinball Quest, you can actually go all the way up, and it's long.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, in Pinball Quest, it's one screen at a time, really. I mean, it does scroll, but it's still really individual areas in each screen, you know? And that's kind of what they did with Rollers of the Realm.
Well, I think it's more so there. I think there are sections of Pinball Quest that are actually long. Like, I remember that game, because there are moments there where you're actually, like, three tiers high, yeah. And I don't know if you remember, you can move the flippers up and down.
Yeah, I know.
And sometimes there's three tiers.
Well, that's exactly what I meant. Like, each level where the flippers are is, like, a different screen.
Yeah,
You know, the different set of it.
But that's
I actually played through all of Pinball Quest about a year ago.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, though. It's like, it's not really that free, though, you know? Like, it's still this kind of boxed up board. Like in Pinball Quest, you can smoothly go to the next area and stuff through a transition or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's not really considered as like a different board per se. Like it's still part of that one big board.
Yeah.
Which is why it feels more free. Whereas in this game, because they want to cram so much on one screen, it sometimes feels compacted. Like there was this one section where literally, this was, you know, if this was a pinball game, this would be terrible design. Basically, like, I shot up this pinball, and then, like, I couldn't get through, because I actually have to flip the flippers, and then, you know, like, so it went down, so I had to flip the other flipper again, so that it goes through here, and it's kind of like this weird maze thing that I had to deal with it.
Yeah, that was the level that had, like, 20 flippers on it.
Yeah.
And
I was like,
it's like a maze.
It was like a maze, exactly.
It was
much less
flippers
pinball,
intelligently to make a maze out of it.
It was actually kind of interesting, because there were some sections where you had to actually hold the flipper down so that when you
shot the ball, it would bounce
off the bottom side of the flipper, not the top of it, to bank into a secret area. That's how you got, like, a key for a treasure chest.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff in the game, but
too early.
I don't know. It needs more pinball,
and it's too early, also.
Yeah.
Did you guys see this game called? So, well, did you guys check out Towerfall at all?
No.
I didn't. No.
Okay. How about Nidhogg?
Yeah, I watched.
Oh
that
man,
play.
High level Nidhogg play this time, because it's been at Evo twice.
It's a cool looking game. I like it.
It was funny, like, there was this girl I was talking to, and I was like, wow, this looks like Prince of Persia, but on crack.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And I actually, it's funny, Ted, you mentioned that, like, last Saturday, like, you know, which was, of course, when Indiecade was, I actually, like, went online to try to find, like, Nidhogg, and I was surprised, like, it was actually played at, like, a fighting game tournament.
Right.
Yeah, it was, like, really interesting.
And the level of play I was seeing was just fantastic.
Yeah. Man. Was there a tournament there for Nidhogg?
Probably.
God.
They were playing, like, on a custom stick.
There was an eSports section this year, which was nice, because one of my complaints was people are really too excited about being bad at games. So seeing eSports there, I really loved it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So they had a bunch of competitive-style games at one station at Indiecade.
Okay. That's really cool.
We also liked Simian Interface, which we wrote about.
Yeah, I like Simian Interface. I mean, it's the first level is literally nothing more than taking two
box-shaped squares and trying to figure out how to get them to merge together into one.
Whoa.
And it goes from that into complex patterns that you kind of have to bring into focus. And the reward for doing all of this is you get a banana.
Really?
Yep. That's it.
Wow.
But, I mean, the entire game I played through in about 15 minutes,
mm-hmm.
but I just really liked it. I don't know why. I just enjoyed playing it. It was almost therapeutic playing that game. You just relax, you listen to the 8-bit styled music, and then you put things together, and sometimes you find secrets and you don't know why. And
apparently you were one of the first people to actually find secrets at the all of Indiecade.
Did you know that? I did know that. He told me.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, it's fun. You can play it right now. Check out my article for the link on simian.interface.
Mm-hmm.
And if you pay to play it, then you get the soundtrack too.
That's awesome.
It's pay what you want, so you can give them as much or as little as you want.
Yeah, support these games, guys.
Hell yeah.
Did you guys notice that they have a Renpy game there?
Yeah.
Didn't like it?
Well, I tried to make it to the Renpy panel, but Christine Love had to pull out due to illness.
Oh. No, but I mean, there was a Renpy game at the Firehouse.
Yes, I did see it. I started the Scream. Was it called Scream? I did play, I think I played it.
Actually. It's called Save the Date.
How far
could you get? No, I didn't play that.
How far could you get into a visual novel at an Indiecade?
I mean, well, I was an asshole to my date, like, in that game. Because she was like, because the whole thing is all about, like, dating or something like that. So, and of course, like, you know, me being terrible at dates, I basically pissed off the girl. Because she said, like, because I guess the girl calls and says, like, hey, are you still picking me up tonight? I said, like, I can't. And then all of a sudden, it was just like this totally like negative scenario where it's just like you're never gonna see her again, and she married somebody else, and now you're wondering like you know like,
all that from one I can't.
From one choice, holy and crap. It's like oh my god, look at how my love life has cascaded into this hell. It was like all right, Renpy game, but it's interesting because it was genuinely a Renpy game.
We should probably mention to our listeners, Renpy is a
visual novel engine.
Yeah,
where they you know like it was famously used for you know Christine Love's games, which is
Analog, A Hate Story, and Hate Plus.
Yeah,
it's also been used for some of her previous titles, including Don't Take It Personally, Kid. This Just Ain't Your Story. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was used for Digital, A Love Story, which she hates.
Yeah, and also, you know, they used it for Katao Shoujo, which is the game where you basically date, like, you know, high school kids who are also handicapped, maybe missing a leg or an eye or can't talk or whatever, or maybe one of them might be a man or something like that.
Okay.
Who knows?
A disability?
I guess so.
Is that really one of them?
No, I don't think so.
But no, they all have, like, one of them has, like, burn injuries.
Yes,
one of them is, like, missing a leg.
Exactly. But that's pretty much it. And it is a free engine. You can download and mess around with it. If you're a great artist, you can. It's really easy to fucking use.
There's an adult version of that game, isn't there?
I think the adult version is the adult version.
This is all 4chan made, which is kind of interesting.
So there you go.
Yeah.
So yeah, so you get to date these crippled girls and then have sex with them.
Yeah, that's Katao Shoujo, but Save the Date, which was there, is completely different. It's basically all about you having a date with this girl, and yes, you can totally fuck it up, like, really easily, and that was my goal. And it worked. There is a game called Cube and Star, A Love Story.
Didn't see it. Check it out.
Mm-mm.
It was weird. It made me remember, like, those old, like, NES games, like Kickle Cubicle and, you know, Super Bomb Blast Man for the Super NES, which is, like, really kind of, like, abstract polygon shapes with meaning.
Mm.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you remember that 2v2 game we played? It was kind of like a very primitive graphics.
For the New York
College. NYU.
Yeah, NYU.
Yeah, basically it was this game where you control a little circle, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess the four players spawn in each of the corners.
Mm-hmm.
And the objective is to get your circle into the opponent's goal.
It's kind of like air hockey.
Or to prevent them from getting into your goal.
Yeah.
The thing is, if you go halfway across the board and you're in their territory, at that point, if you press the button that causes you to move in the direction you're facing, you kind of use up some energy. And if you use too much, you then become vulnerable to get destroyed.
Mm-hmm. And so, you can't move.
So basically, if a player gets destroyed, the opposing team gets a point. If a player gets into the goal, they get a point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And what makes it interesting is kind of how each level changes on the fly. Like, instead of just having a clear board, which would be pretty basic, there will be bars that are like moving back and forth that you can't go through,
like obstacles and
just
whatnot.
Basically the terrain is changing throughout the game, and it becomes pretty interesting to decide, oh, do I want to play offense, do I want to play defense, do I want to try to get through this terrain or not, you know, what should I do? And it's just one of those games where it's as simple as a video game can be, but it's also as purely fun as a game can be. What was the title of it? Somebody tell me.
I don't know.
I don't remember. I played it at Evo as well.
Crap. Well, there was a great four-player game. I can't tell you what it is. Sorry.
But yeah, I mean, I know exactly what you mean. And they also had another game, Neck Ninjas or something like that?
Yeah, that won some awards. So if you got the list, it's on the list of the awards. It's on there.
Yeah, it was basically like some ninja game where it's like...
Unfortunately, when we played it, the setup we were on was very laggy, so it was hard to appreciate.
Yeah.
But it still did well at the show, so good for them.
Yeah. We can't really describe it. It was basically like kind of like a one-on-one game that's like more like...
No, it was more than that.
What?
We had four players.
Well, it's basically a four-player free-for-all, basically. I mean, it's really interesting game. I just couldn't get like a firm grasp of it because of like the frame rate. It was like kind of, they're kind of like, you know, like it wasn't as responsive, but yeah, it was a pretty cool game. There was also another game that I played called Pico, which is really interesting. It's basically a platformer where it's one of those games where you have to guide like somebody from beginning to end, but check this out. The mechanic is that parts of the world are basically encased in these windows, and you have to drag them around. There's like a kind of like a diagram in it, and then that's how you can get from point A to point B. If it connects, it snaps there, and you can like walk into it and stuff, and then you can kind of arrange different parts.
Is it
kind of
like an Echo Chrome kind of thing?
Yes, but with windows.
Windows.
Yeah, so literally the gameplay mechanic is that you know, like WASD for the movement, and then you can drag the windows to create like the path.
And you're talking about like Windows operating system.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, like themed like completely like that, which is really interesting. And it wasn't a firehouse, yeah.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. Yeah,
you never know it's going to blow up. You got to pay attention.
Yeah.
That's why I love IndieCade, though. I mean, or in just indie games in general, you get new gameplay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and speaking of which, you know, I know we reviewed the game, but I talked to the guys who did Rogue Legacy. Those guys are really fun to talk to.
I still got to play that.
Yeah, and they're not porting it, the game. They're still working on, you know, the Mac port and all that stuff. And it's funny because like I was talking to him about the Mac port, so I'm like, "Where's the Mac port?" He's like, "We actually had it done, but we kind of fucked up at some point, so we kind of pushed it back."
It was done, and then it's not done.
Yeah, because they were trying to optimize it, but because of the somehow with the optimization, they actually fucked up the game more.
Back to the drawing board.
So it's like, oops.
They couldn't just go revert to the old build?
Yeah, no, I don't know. They could have, but it's just, they would have been back to square one. Like, even with the game broken as it was, I guess it was still a step forward. So it was kind of like, all right, whatever. But, you know, they want to make it as close to parity as the PC version. And I admire those guys for doing that. And same thing, I think it's not out on Linux yet, but I think, you know, if it isn't, then they're taking the same amount of care as they are with the PC version. And so I kind of like asked them, you know, like, so this is your follow-up to Don't Shit Your Pants. And they're like, yeah, it is. And I said, and I had to say, like, you know, we actually wrote a review of Don't Shit Your Pants on our website. Here's my card. We reviewed it in April Fool's Day. They're like, are you serious? We're going to check that out right now. And so they did. So they're really happy about that. So when they discovered that we had the review of Rogue Legacy and stuff like that, like, they said, like, yeah, it's a very polarizing game, but it's like, you know.
I'm the one who reviewed it. I did give it a 7. Which yeah. Is,
what did you give Don't Shit Your Pants?
8.
Yes, because obviously Don't Shit Your Pants is better than Rogue Legacy.
Back to that debate again.
Back to that debate
again. Well,
that
was a lovely full circle. Thank you, Alex.
Yeah, thank you. That's why I'm the host. Anyways, but yeah, so, no, but they love, you know, like, I asked them, so what's your passion with this game? Like, so why did you guys think about this? And the simplest thing was like, well, we hate typical, like, you know, like roguelikes, because we feel like it's not too friendly. Like, we still want that sort of like,
well, that's one of the really least newbie friendly genres.
Exactly. Ever. And we wanted to kind of introduce it to a group of people who don't have to deal with the pain of that. Which, you know, most roguelikes are pretty much like what, like RPGs, right? Like,
yeah,
predominantly.
You basically, you walk around, and every time you move, the enemies move.
Yeah.
So it's pretty easy to get surrounded and fucked over. And usually there's permadeath, too. So.
Yeah. So basically, like, the thing that they said was, like, well, why don't we introduce that in a completely different genre, but just still kind of keep the whole roguelike thing, which is why they said, we love Castlevania, and let's make it into a Castlevania game with roguelike mechanics. And, of course, they added a comedic element of, like, well, if you, you know, there's a guy with you know, perpetual flatulence, or, like, you know, a guy is completely colorblind, and, you know, that the fun stuff, you know, or one dude's a baby or whatever, you know, which makes it really fun. And that was the first time I actually saw the game in action. I really loved the art style.
Yeah.
And it's funny because our discussion devolved from Rogue Legacy to Castlevania. And so we just started talking about Castlevania, and he's like, yeah, I loved, you know, like, I loved the Dawn of Sorrow on the DS. And I'm like, yeah, I also played the Aria of Sorrow. So really, like, you know, they really kind of did a good job with that whole thing, and I was really happy, but I couldn't for the life of me, like, vote for it. I don't know why. It's probably because, like, so many people were, like, playing it and stuff, and I couldn't try it out myself.
Speaking of Castlevania, the PlayStation 2 version, what was that called, the one you liked?
Oh, shit. The PS2 version?
Yeah.
Did I ever like a
PS2? Or PS3, I'm sorry, PS3.
Lords of Shadow.
Yeah, that's on PC now.
Yeah, Collectors.
Finally. And from what I understand, it's the best version of the game. So.
Well, yes, it is.
So I'm actually going to play that.
Collectors, that, oh my god, that's easily 20 hours, dude.
And Lords of Shadow 2 is on the way, right?
Yeah. Lords of Shadow 1 is easily 20 hours of gameplay. Huh. That was the first.
Was your main problem with it, the frame rate?
Yes.
Is that your single biggest issue?
Single biggest issue.
So it should be really a much better game on PC.
Oh, well, Lords of Shadow 2 has been completely optimized, so it should be also good on consoles. But keep in mind, Lords of Shadow 1 pushed both the PS3 and the 360 past its, like, you know, past its limits.
That's a problem.
I mean, you shouldn't
do that.
Yeah, it's like they didn't exhibit restraint. It's like, let's push it.
I'm, I
like,
suppose that's the Grand Theft Auto 4 problem too.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, Grand Theft Auto 4, yeah. Well, it's more like an experience with the platform, but...
I took us away from...
But Lords of Shadow Collection
will
contains Mirror of Fate also, which was a 3DS one.
Mirror of Fate,
and that's even better. That's... You're talking about, like, games that have poor frame rate? That has poor frame rate. That has worse frame rate than, like, Lords of Shadow.
Jeez.
Yeah, but it's... It's good to get in a collection.
That'll have to go onto my Steam wish list.
Yeah, so, Ted, you played Code. I don't know anything about that game.
I played it, too. So you can play it now.
Code is a game where you play as a memory leak.
Uh-huh. You are an at symbol.
You're an at symbol.
I think I saw this a little bit. Anyways.
And you go around actual, like, code segments, and you can interact with variables. Like, you can make Booleans go to true instead of false, and you can change the value of integers.
Yeah, so, like, you have to, like, approach a zero. So, say you need to... turn a zero into a one. You just kind of bump into it.
Yeah, you bump it. And then you have basically, by reading the program, you figure out what variables you need to set in order to go to the next level. That's it.
Yes, so it actually, to a limited degree, it might actually teach you a bit about programming if you don't know much. But if you don't know much, you're not going to get very far, because eventually...
If I hand this to Chris, will he be able to beat the game?
No.
It doesn't sound fun at all.
I mean, you're literally moving an at symbol through lines of code, mm-hmm. bumping into integers and Booleans, and just trying to decipher the code. And I mean, having studied a bit of C++, I was able to, you know, get through the first six levels or so. Mm-hmm. Then I got to level 7, and there was just one thing too many, and I did not want to actually do coding in that particular moment and figure it out. And I'm sure I could have if I spent some more time with it. But I can't imagine how far they're going to take this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really had fun with it. I put a little preview up and a link to where you can actually play the same demo that I played.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to cover more of it as time goes on, and it looks like I will be.
It's funny
because I will be getting updated builds of the game.
That's awesome.
It's so weird that this game exists, because when my brother and I were studying C++, we decided that there should be a game that teaches programming, and then here comes this game.
There's technically two of them. Quadrilateral Cowboy, to a degree, like, kind of teaches, you know, object method.
Yeah, but this one actually forces you to go in and look at the lines of code and see the formulas. And
it can be pretty dry.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, you got to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have the analytical mind for it, you're just going to hate it.
Yeah.
As for me, I'm like, ooh, this is fun.
Yeah. So there, have you guys seen, you guys should have seen this, this game called Perfect Woman?
No.
Really?
Yeah,
it's the one. Big, it was the Kinect game?
That was the
game.
Kinect thing?
Yeah, that was the Kinect game. Mm. Basically, like, you had to copy and mimic these poses and stuff in different stages of your life. so that eventually the game will judge you based off of your arbitrary decisions whether or not you lived a good life.
Wow.
It was awesome because, like, you know, it was kind of funny because, like, when you were, like, an adult, one of the jobs, because there's three different difficulties, and each difficulty basically, like, kind of arbitrarily takes you to, like, a different stage of your life. So, like, for example, one of the easy decisions that you can do, there's easy, medium, hard, which dictate how difficult the poses are. The easy one is terrorist. So literally, like, it depicts, like, you, your character, like, in the middle of an airport, like, with a bomb strapped on your chest, what? You know, like, doing these weird poses that, of Holy course, crap. Is going to get you really... Yes. So that's...
Now hold the terrorist pose.
Yeah, hold the terrorist pose, exactly. The terrorist pose. Flailing your arms, by the way, you know, like, attracting attention.
Right.
And it kind of, it's more like an art project. It's made by some students, with, you know, from UCLA, and they basically wanted to... The impetus of it is that they looked at, you know, like, kind of psychological surveys and questionnaires, and even... other questionnaires in general, and saw, like, how some arbitrary choice that you make in some questionnaires don't really necessarily reflect your personality, you know, like, without the proper kind of contextualization. So they thought of making a game just exactly like that. So, but instead of a questionnaire, we'll make you do all these yoga poses, which have absolutely nothing to do with what part of your life you're in, like, let's say, being a terrorist. And we will grade you based off of how successful you are in your life, based off of your yoga poses and your choices in life.
That's really right in line with my sense of humor, oddly enough.
Yeah. So it's called Perfect Woman. There were many, many... If you check our Instagram, you'll actually... it's not on our Instagram, but I could post them, repost them again on our Instagram and stuff, and so you guys can see it. It's really, really off-kilter. And, it's... Everybody was afraid to play it. Everybody. Because it is Kinect, so...
Did anybody get a chance to check out the Oculus Rift?
No.
None of us, huh?
Yeah, the lines are too long.
We already had, like, an appointment, like, at E3 for
it. Yeah, but that was limited because of the resolution. I was looking... I really want to try the Oculus Rift in a full resolution 1080p game environment.
Didn't they have daylight running on Oculus Rift there?
They sure did.
Shit.
That would have been cool.
Yeah, that would have been cool, man.
Man.
But so what else did you guys see there?
I stayed for the night games.
Oh, yeah? What'd they have there?
Let's see. They had a game where each person had a move controller and they had to shake them in rhythm. And basically, you had two people, and each time you did it, you would moan. And if you screwed up, you'd go, ow! And you had to reach orgasm as fast as possible.
Wow. I thought you was Johann Sebastian Joust.
Edgar Rice Soiree. They had that there.
Okay.
Right. That's strange. I've read what you wrote about it. I've heard you describe it, and I still don't understand.
You hang 20 move controllers in a 5x4 square, and you have to. They're each lit in one of four colors.
Mm-hmm.
And you always have to try to hold two of your color. They're always changing, and you have to, you know, just keep moving. It's like kind of like reminding me of a Legends of the Hidden Temple game.
Interesting.
So, do they actually
Let me ask a question. You have to have 20 move controllers.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, this isn't meant for the average person.
Okay.
This is why the article said this is a great game you can never play.
I mean, that's what I was going to ask, was do they actually have, like, this available to download for that one person that happens to be able to afford 20 move controllers?
Nope.
No.
Can't do it.
Because Johann Sebastian Joust would be something.
That is coming out.
Yeah.
Johann Sebastian Joust is coming with Sports Friends.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be coming out on PlayStation 3. What else did they have? They had a game called Killer Queen, which was a 5-on-5 game played with an arcade cabinet specially set up for this. Mm. You had two of them facing each other, each with spots for 5 players.
Mm.
You had 4 people be drones, and your controls were move left, move right, and jump. And the queen could move left, move right, fly, and dive bomb.
Mm.
And you basically had to play a team-based game where there are multiple ways to win.
Mm.
And there's a need to see, like, impromptu teamwork. And it was one of those things where you'd only see it, you know, once, and you're not going to ever own it.
Yeah.
I can't think of really anything else that pops into mind.
Yeah, me
too. But it was definitely a great experience.
Definitely. And this is your second time at IndieCade.
Yeah, this is now my second IndieCade.
Yeah, yes. I really had a lot of fun. I wish I wasn't hungover from the night before, so...
I actually had more fun at IndieCade than E3.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Like, I saw a lot of really promising games there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, this is definitely, like, the place if you wanted to, like, I mean, shit, like, if you wanted to try out the PS4, you can fucking play it here. And with a good game, like, Resogun was really looking really good. Like, I'm really
impressed. Yeah, I hate to say it, Resogun is the game that I will be playing on my PS4.
And that's okay. And that's okay, though, because, like, you know, that is going to be joined by a whole bunch of other indie games that you'd want to play on your PS4. And that's, like, and that is crazy to me that our landscape is changing so much from, like, AAA to indie in such a, you know, quick manner that it's kind of scary. But, you know, there'll still be room for AAA. There'll still be room for indie, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, but, yeah, look at Grand Theft Auto 5, and there's plenty of room for AAA.
Yeah. Now, you know, but if anything, I'm just curious about The Witness. I'm really curious about that game and how that's going to be. Because that seems to be, like, a big-budget indie game to some degree. So.
Triple I development.
Yeah. Yes. So, do you guys want to, like, you know, help me close this up? What do you guys have, like, you know, like, what are you guys looking forward to in the next few weeks?
Pokemans!
Oh, shit.
I got Pokemon Y! I picked the Fire Starter, and then that was stupid because they gave out Torchic as download. But, you know what comes out in 2 weeks?
What?
Ace Attorney.
Oh, shit, that's right.
12 days to Ace Attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll tide me over well before the PS4, which is 34 days away, like I said.
God.
I've just got to get back into Disgaea.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun. I mean, I was always a fan of the original game.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the characters. I loved the storyline, most of it anyway. So, I mean, it gets a little annoying from time to time because, you know, that is just the nature of a game where the main character is a total brat.
Yeah.
But, you know, they still manage to hit those emotional highs. So,
yeah.
So far, from what I've played of the second one, I guess it's the fifth one, but, you know, it's great to be back. It's like you know, seeing some old friends. They're
good characters you actually want to play as.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as much as the game's evolved over the years and as much refining as they've done with the series, I don't think they ever made better characters than the original trio.
Yeah.
And Disgaea D2 is a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
Going to play it more. Looking forward to it.
How about you, Chris? Are you going to replay, like, Dragon Age and Mass Effect all over again, this time together at the same time with two TVs?
No, I'm looking forward to Batman, actually.
Oh, really? You're getting that one?
Yeah.
Cool. At least one of us will. By the way, you guys remember Anthony.
Yeah.
Guess what he's into now?
What?
You will never guess. Never. Never. Guess.
Big butt.
Guess.
Big butt.
No, guess.
I'm telling you, dick butt.
Well, no, it's not that, obviously.
Oh, well, I'm telling you,
guess. Come on.
Well, he's big on RPGs.
Come on, guess it. Guess. Come on.
Board games.
Come on.
Go.
No. Come on.
Board games!
League of Legends.
Ah.
Okay, that's not surprising. It's a popular game.
Not really.
Why?
But is it remember a game you ever imagined awesome Anthony playing?
Oh. Was that Anthony who hated it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
See? That's why I'm like, wait. I called him out. Like, wait a second. You hate Awesome Knots, but you love League of Legends. Yeah, I'm just playing it a little bit, like once a day.
Does he not know that they're the same game?
No, I don't think so.
He'll figure it out, and then he'll be like, oh.
Yeah, exactly. He's slowly turning.
That's the new character scary. For that came out, the one that got the music video.
Oh, what is it?
Jinx.
Oh,
so yeah.
Oh, that's right, yes. Yeah. We talked about that. So what are you going to play?
When?
Until the next time we do the podcast, which is probably after the PS4 launch.
Go PS4 Ranger.
Don't tell Sean that, he'll get mad.
What?
The next podcast is after the PS4 launch?
Yeah, sure.
It's between...
It's exactly a month from now, I'm just saying.
There's more time.
Because, I mean, there's so much coming out in November. I really have to look to see what I want to get, because...
Well, thank goodness for me, like, that South Park was pushed to December, so I'm good with that.
Yeah.
I got that fully paid off. Like, I don't even have Watch Dogs paid off, and I have that game fully paid off.
South Park going to be on next-gen or current-gen?
Current-gen only. But it's going to be so good. It's going to be so good.
Did you see the new South Park?
No.
Yeah, no.
Oh, God.
It's bullshit.
Is this a Minecraft one?
No, it's a Zimmerman.
Oh. I might have to cover my ears if you guys talk about it.
We got
to
wait.
No, it's... you have an opinion?
Yeah, we got to...
Wait a minute, that child was...
Let's just watch it after
the podcast. We will watch this.
Eric Cartman.
Okay, so you guys know what we're going to be doing after this podcast, so... I guess we're going to see you guys like after the PS4 launch, which is going to be in exactly how many days?
34!
34 days from the time of this recording.
Unless you win the Taco Bell thing, and I guess you get it 3 days early.
Yeah.
3 days?
Yeah.
Only really? 3 days. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really? Better than nothing.
Wow.
Better than not, yeah. All right, so I guess we'll see you guys later, and kudos.
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 To everybody.